This is Mark Shepard, Romo Lampkin from Battlestar Galactica. You're listening to Radio Free Nintendo.
Welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is our big episode 150, and it also happens to correspond to more or less 3 years on the air for this very fine podcast you are now listening to. I hope you've all enjoyed the past 3 years, or at least some portion thereof. We are not going to do a big, spectacular 3-hour special like we did for episode 100. In fact, I would venture to say we may never do that again.
No.
but we do have some special things. I don't know about planned. We are going to do some special things in the second segment, and really Greg is the mastermind there, and we don't know exactly what he's going to pull out. What he's going to do is play some clips from, or James is going to play some clips from previous shows.
DJ James coming at you?
Yeah, we are going to hear them at the same time you do. So, by the way, Carl is here. Carl Castaneda, former
hello,
host.
Hello there. What's all this going on over here?
We've got a 5-man podcast for you.
It's a royal flush,
it's
baby.
It's going to get crazy.
Woo! John's the queen.
Oh, cry, man.
See, that was good.
I'm the 10. Anyway, just want to say I'm very glad to be back. I hope I will not be missing any more weeks this summer. I can't guarantee that. There might be one in July. I'm going to a conference, and I'm not exactly sure how my internet's going to work out. I'm about to do a temporary move for a summer internship. But word on the street is that the internet's pretty good over there, so I think I'll be all right. So anyway, I'm hoping I'll be back for good, but you never know. Summer is a crazy time. But actually, last week, in my absence, you guys did a great job. Greg, as the host, and of course, we had TYP on, and John and James holding down the fort. And of course, John, it was nice to hear his voice again. He'd been gone for a couple weeks.
It was good to be back, Johnny.
It's the first time I've vocally chatted with John in almost a month, actually. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Since before he was married.
Yeah, it was just back when I was a dishonest man. So. No, I've done a lot of growing up in that month, Johnny. I just don't have you know.
Can we get a rim shot there, please?
I know you have. And of course, I'm very glad that Carl is here actually tonight, because I can thank him sort of in person for producing the E3 shows. That was really fantastic.
That was no problem at all, fellas. I mean,
it was so much help because
it's really easy.
Some of that stuff is very difficult to do from the show. We have limited computing power and limited internet access.
And limited microphones.
Limited time.
Yeah.
Limited energy.
Yes, the microphone, in some sense, did well, and it allowed us to have a lot of people on the show. So
right.
I'm grateful for that. The quality could have been a lot better. And
especially when we hook it up into the right jack.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's the kind of shit that happens when you're doing it all, you know, for the first time.
This is the kind of stuff that makes me sad. See, I missed all these hijinks.
Yeah.
Breaks my heart.
Just gonna have to wait until next year, John. At which point it will have been 4 years for you between E3s.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. That's the thing. I don't know if I can keep going to E3 after I turn 40. I don't know. I think I just become creepy after that.
No, dude. There were people that were there much older than 40, and they were creepy. But yes.
Okay. All right. All right.
So I'll start with new business since I was gone last week. I do have a few interesting things, I think. Primarily, I've been playing Deadly Creatures for the past couple of weeks on and off because I've been traveling. But I rented this, and, you know, Deadly Creatures came out late last year, really without very much fanfare. And I remember seeing it at E3 about a year ago, and I thought it was very, very cool at E3. I wasn't exactly sure how it would turn out because it was still a few months away from being finished, but I thought it was a very cool idea, and they were on the right track. The way they were talking, it sounded like they kind of knew what they were doing with Wii, and the final game bears that out. I mean, it's it's a very unusual, very striking game in that you're playing as the scorpion and this tarantula, which are characters that, you know, you've never really played as before. And they're unusual characters, you know, they don't talk, they're not really driving the story. The things that they do are driven by instinct, basically. And the game has a nice way of fitting some of the classic game elements, like, you know, little pickups for health and experience points and things like that. And it tends to find ways to develop these in, or to present them in ways that are organic with the environment and with the, you know, the whole atmosphere of the game. So it's very moody. It's actually very creepy, and not just because of the, you know, the insects and you know, or the arachnids. It's creepy because the music is very atmospheric.
Yeah, I've heard that.
The visuals are very dark and foreboding, and the game has a lot of really excellent foreshadowing, which is not something I've seen in very many video games. The story is told in a subtle way, but it's actually very dark, very adult, I would say, not in the pornographic sense. It's just told in a very mature manner, and yet the game isn't even rated M. Mm. It's actually really cool, and I'm not finished with it yet, but I'm about 80% through it, and I really do want to finish it because I'm interested in the story, I'm interested in the gameplay. One of the cool things is that as you defeat certain bosses in the game, you actually gain some of their powers, which is a bit like Mega Man. So, you know, the Scorpion will gain the ability to dig through crumbled dirt or to slash through dead weeds to open up new pathways. The Tarantula earns the ability to walk on the ceiling, for instance. They can both walk on walls, but eventually the tarantula can also walk on the ceiling.
So now the bosses are other insects, right?
Well, yeah, or lizards, or rats, or snakes.
Or Satan.
So, to this point, and I'm pretty far in the game, I have not fought the humans at all. I mean, I don't really see how you could. They're more environmental hazards, and one really cool thing about the game is that in the beginning, you're in a lot of caves and, you know, sort of canyon lands and things like that, and it's all like the way the graphics are and the way the sound is done, it all just feels like stuff that you've never really seen in a game before. It's unique, and I just love that, and I think the game is very well put together. The graphics are excellent. There are a couple of nasty textures, including the very first one that you see when you start the game is this cactus texture that's very unfortunate. But once you get past the first 5 seconds of the game, I think it actually looks fantastic, especially the two characters. Really, really impressive. And the gameplay is very good. There's a lot of exploration, and what I like about the exploration in this game is that they use the three-dimensionality of the environments in a way that most games do not, because the characters can both crawl on the walls. And plus you're crawling under things and going through little holes and in different structures.
And does it use like the pointer and stuff for like webs and all that kind of?
It does. Yeah, the pointer is pretty minor, because you can use the web without the pointer.
Okay.
So you don't use it that much. There is some motion control, but it's only on like the special attacks. So it's more used to punctuate combat, it's more like No More Heroes uses
it,
you know.
Which
is fine. It's actually used very well, and the motions that you do generally correlate pretty well to what the characters are actually doing without becoming overly complicated. And I guess the final thing I would say about it is that if you like games like Chibi Robo or Pikmin, where you're playing as a very small character in a really big world, and you kind of get to see things from this different perspective, I think you'll really like Deadly Creatures, because the whole game is that. And as you progress through the game, you have more and more encounters with human elements, you know, which start to look, because in the beginning half, you get pretty accustomed to seeing all this organic stuff, and the natural environments are actually very interesting and sometimes very complex, the way that you move around them. But then as you get farther in the game, you end up, I just crawled through and on the outside of an old broken down truck that was full of spider webs and crazy stuff, and it was a huge environment for this spider to go through, and it's just really interesting and actually very creepy and alien looking. It's like I almost got so enmeshed in the the creature's own viewpoint, that these things that to me as a human should seem familiar actually look really alien. And that's a pretty special accomplishment, you know, of the game, I think.
I was just thinking of other games that kind of do that, and the only one, not the feeling of dark and stuff, but the perspective switch, the only one I can think of right off is Mr. Mosquito, which I played a couple years ago, which you're a mosquito and there's people around, so it's kind of the same in that respect, but it's a lot different in tone, obviously.
Because aren't the voices, isn't one of the voices Billy Bob Thornton?
And Hopper,
yeah, the other's
as well.
Dennis Hopper, who's doing a little bit of a hokey Southern accent,
yeah,
but not too terrible.
The Texas
Billy Bob's
Chainsaw 2 hokey.
I haven't seen that, but
oh god, you don't want it.
Definitely both guys I respect a lot, and there's a couple of pretty interesting interviews on the disc that you can watch with the two actors. But you kind of pick up the story from the creature's perspective by sort of eavesdropping on their conversations. So as you're going through these environments, you kind of come across these chance encounters with the humans, and it's not like you're crawling all over them or anything like that. You're kind of, you know, on the ground nearby. You overhear it. Sometimes the game kind of stops so you can listen to it. Sometimes they just keep talking while you play the game. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you wander off and go a different way, and then a couple, you know, missions later, you kind of come back and meet them at a different spot. So apparently what these two guys are doing is one of them has, like, a map to some buried gold out in the desert. So they're out there and they're talking about, you know, how to avoid scorpion stings and, you know, what kind of creatures and plants live out there. There's a lot of sort of casual banter, and then there's a lot of talking about, man, when are we going to find this stuff, and how much do you think it's worth, and yada, yada, yada. So it's all building up to some kind of exciting climax that, if I remember correctly from the previews, the final stage is this old abandoned gas station where something goes very, very wrong. But it's not really clear that the humans are really heroes or villains. They're sort of, I mean, as a, you know, as a scorpion or a tarantula,
they're bugs.
What is a human? It's kind of a hazard, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, the story, again, is told in a very subtle way, so it's hard for me to say exactly what's going on, because you kind of pick up bits and pieces of conversation. I'm very interested to see where it goes, that's for sure.
Sounds really cool and unique, actually.
It's a little bit like No Country for Old Men.
Yeah,
I think, but told in a much less direct way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the other main game I've been playing lately is Final Fantasy IV: The After Years.
The cell phone game?
Yeah, the WiiWare / cell phone game. And you know, I'm a really, really, really big fan of Final Fantasy IV, and I think I could only recommend this game to people like me who are just really into it. Because the game plays exactly the same way, and actually it shares a lot of the assets. You go to a lot of the same places. I mean, you're playing as the son of two of the main characters in the first game, but the stuff that he ends up doing very closely mirrors the events in the original game. So, I mean, you're doing them a little bit out of order. Some of them have extra sections, or you go through them in a little bit different way, but it's very much kind of a retread, a rehash, a remix of the original game. And it's pretty short. It's 4 or 5 hours long. Now, that seems extremely short for an RPG, but at the same time, it's only $8. And there is another part to it that's going to be released at the end of the summer that I think is another $8, and that will kind of conclude the story. Because I just beat it yesterday, and it ends very abruptly.
Mm.
And the story is definitely not finished. So I know there's some side stories of different characters that are like $3 a piece. The only one available now is Rydia, but I guess they're going to release new ones like every couple weeks or something. I don't know the schedule for that. And I don't know if those are worth it. I haven't done the Rydia one yet. But I am really looking forward to the conclusion of the main story coming out in a couple months. And I will gladly pay another $8 for that. I mean, I really like the After Years. I like playing through it. I like seeing the graphics and hearing the old music and everything. But I think if you have not played the original game or the DS conversion of it a whole lot, you're not going to get much out of this. And also, I would say it's very difficult.
Do you think you're going to go through and play the whole thing?
All the side stories?
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. I thought originally it was, you know, they said it was like 9 episodes or something. I don't really think that's true. I mean, from what I've read, and it's not totally clear, but from what I've read, it's basically two episodes that make up two halves of the main story. And then there are seven side stories that kind of tell you what happens to some of these other characters who are only seen very, very briefly in the main story. So it's not sequential like you might think. It's not like a Telltale Games, Strong Bad kind of thing. So I don't know if I'm going to go through any or all of the side stories. I haven't decided yet. I need to read up more about what's contained in those and if they're really worth the money. But I am definitely going to buy the conclusion of the main story. One last thing, I've been on airplanes a lot lately and buses, and I've been playing quite a lot of Retro Game Challenge, which I had not picked up for a couple months. And primarily I've been playing the RPG in there, Guadia Quest, which is actually pretty long. It's easily 10 hours long, if not more, if you play through it all the way.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's one of 8 games contained on this DS card, and it's like 10, 12-hour RPG. And it's actually very, very good. I mean, there's a lot of obscurity to it on purpose because they want to make it like an old NES Dragon Quest kind of game with a bad translation and a bunch of items with names that, you know, that don't describe what they do. So you just kind of have to try them and figure out what they do. So there's a lot of that going on. But the game, like, once you get past a couple of the obstacles that have been intentionally placed for you, I think it's really good RPG, and I've had a lot of fun going through it, and I'm still not finished with it. I've played it quite a lot. It's pretty difficult, very, very large dungeons with some pretty interesting little puzzles and trap doors and things like that to get around, and some pretty cool bosses too, actually. So the main reason I wanted to bring up Retro Game Challenge, other than that I've been playing it a lot lately, is that Nick and Chuck and I met with Xseed at E3, and, you know, Xseed is the publisher of this game in America. And, you know, I actually pulled out my DS and showed him that Retro Game Challenge was, you know, the game I had most recently been playing. And he, you know, the representative, he was happy to see that. I don't remember his exact role in the company. You know, I kind of told him that, look, I don't know how this game is sold. I just want to tell you that for my money, you know, I really love it. I've tried to get people to play it and buy it. I think it's excellent. And I just really hope you guys are considering the sequel because, you know, I've heard very good things about it. And he seemed, you know, he was very non-committal, but he didn't rule it out. He kind of, you know, gave the impression that they're still considering it. They're trying to figure out how to market it. And I think also they want to see how Retro Game Challenge continues to sell in the long term.
They want to see if it's got one of those slow burns.
Yeah, residual word of mouth, or I don't know, maybe it'll have a kind of a revival. So I just want to tell people that there were so many DS games, so many great DS games that came out in the first few months of the year. And if this one passed you by and you were considering it, I would really encourage you to go out and pick it up. Because if you're a fan of old 8-bit kind of games, or if you're just curious about that stuff, it's a very, very good value, and it's really a lot of fun. And I would never tell someone to buy a game just because it'll help bring the sequel out, because I don't believe in voting with your dollars. I believe in buying something that you want. And I just want to tell people that you do want this game, and I think you should go buy it for that reason.
It's not voting with your dollars. You should just buy this game because you want it.
The nanny Met strikes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I just want to show my support for Retro Game Challenge, and to admit my selfishness, I did tell the guy that if they do localize the sequel, I would love to be one of the editors in the magazine. So you can also possibly help make that happen by going out and picking up the game.
This is shameful. This is...
I'm a shill.
See, that's the whole thing. It's like, now that Johnny's, like, now that he's retired from the site, he's just like, his morals have gone out the window. He has no scruples whatsoever. It's like, Johnny for hire, man. Johnny for hire. That's who he is now.
All my magic cards are gone, so I have to sell something.
Oh, shit. He's already sold them for smack.
That's the thing. He doesn't do reviews anymore, so nobody can buy him anymore, right?
That's right.
He has nothing good left to sell.
You signed off on some of those reviews, John. You're
I know. That's the That's my life, Greg.
That's John's legacy.
Sorry for taking up so much time. I just wanted to catch up. Carl, you are our guest, and I have no idea what you've been playing, so why don't you fill us in a little bit?
Oh my gosh, I've just been playing so much stuff. I don't know where to start.
I bet. You always are.
With all of the things I've been playing, I wouldn't know where to begin. Actually, I did, this is going back a few months, but I actually just did finally finish Resident Evil 5 on the PS3. And it was fun. I had a really good time with it. I wouldn't say it stands up neck and neck with Resident Evil 4, but overall it was still really good. My only big problem with it is that I don't see how anyone could play that not co-op.
Really?
I would have no... I played like a little bit of single player at first, because basically I went up to Atlanta to visit my brother, and we decided to kind of just power through the entire game while I was up there. And I started playing a little bit of it at first, just so I could get used to it before, you know, we started playing the same game. And Sheva is useless when she's like a non-playable character.
Yeah.
But once we started playing together, it was fine. Like, the co-op is implemented really, really well. It really does, except in a few areas... You know, teamwork is vital, absolutely, in the entire thing. And it really does allow for a really great play experience. But yeah, I would not play it alone. I mean, thankfully, you know, you've got local co-op, online co-op. You know, there are a lot of different options for it.
I'm a little concerned, because, like, I do want to catch up with RE5, but by the time I do, it'll be months after it came out. And I'm afraid I might have trouble finding somebody who wants to play through it with me.
You know a lot of people with Xboxes and or I guess just Xboxes.
John,
yeah.
Have you played this yet?
No, I don't have it. I don't have it. I'm
okay. You guys should get it at the same time. Yeah.
Maybe we'll go through it together eventually.
Yeah. It's a great co-op experience. I would definitely recommend it. And although the final boss fight and then in you know other scattered areas of the game, very cheap, like way cheaper than Resident Evil 4.
The funniest thing about that is like with the other games, they would have said, you know, don't play it alone because it's so scary. With RE5, it's like don't play it alone because the AI is so garbage.
It's pretty scary.
Yeah, don't play it alone because the AI will fuck you up.
Exactly. Other thing is like you know, Resident Evil 4, basically it's like bullet heaven. They just ammo rains from the sky. And in Resident Evil 5, that's not really the case. Like you kind of have to conserve, and it's more, you know, the old Resident Evils where when you come upon bullets, it's like a really great thing.
Mm-hmm.
Although they did fix one thing, like in Resident Evil 4, I don't know if you guys remember, but the Magnum was basically useless. Because never got ammo for it. You never got ammo for it. You got maybe
you had ammo. I mean, it was powerful, but you couldn't.
It was too powerful,
which is probably why they never gave you any ammo.
Exactly. You basically use it in the Krauser fight, and that's what they lead you up to the entire game for. And then that's it. You never use the gun again. But in Resident Evil 5, they really balance it out, where you really get a really more scattered, equal amount of ammo for each weapon. So that was really nice. Other than that, I haven't really been playing too much. As Johnny might have surmised looking at these show notes, I spend a lot of my times now, comic books have kind of supplanted video games for me in a big way. And so a lot of my entertainment dollar is spent in that arena.
So that's funny, because I had kind of the opposite progression.
Yeah, me too.
Back when I was a teenager.
So yeah, I am Johnny, because I remember he had read Spider-Man a lot in the 90s, and I was like, guess who's coming back to comics? Ben fucking Reilly. And we chatted about that for a bit.
Really?
Oh yeah. Oh, he's coming back, dude, in a big way.
Yep.
Oh.
That's the clone of Spider-Man who, like, showed up back in the 70s originally and then disappeared for 20 years, and then they brought him back in the 90s, and I guess he disappeared again. And now they're bringing him back again.
All nine of you out there who got that reference, you know.
Yeah. Shame on you.
Get pumped.
Well, I was like, do I know Ben Reilly? The name sounds familiar. Maybe I met him at a party.
Did I go to high school with Ben Reilly?
Then Carl told me that... Carl told me that Aunt May is getting married, and I was like, I thought Aunt May died like 10 years ago. He's like, yeah, they brought her back. I was like, they brought... Seriously.
Okay. What?
I understand Superman coming back to life, but really, Aunt May, can that bitch please stay dead?
Oh my god.
She's such a
there
worthless
is no
character.
Need for that whatsoever.
I'm going to explain Aunt May's death and return real quick in like 2 seconds. Basically, she got sniped by some dude who was aiming for Peter.
Couldn't they just let her die of old age?
Okay, because Peter was so guilt-ridden, he went to the devil and made a deal with the devil.
Oh, dear God.
So
my
that
God.
in exchange for Aunt May's life, he would get a divorce from Mary Jane.
What? Moving on, James.
I'm at a loss for words.
That is unbelievable.
That is...
Soundtrack provided by Stevie Ray Vaughan.
100% true.
James, please, please help us segue out of this.
You can't handle it. You can't handle the truth.
My mind just got wiped out.
His mind is blown.
Okay, we'll skip you for now.
What
we'll
have
come
I
back.
Been playing?
You don't know, Greg. How about you, man?
All right. So I got to go to an event this week called sort of like E3 Comes to London. So Nintendo had bought out some space in a hotel near Piccadilly Circus in London, and but had pretty much all their E3 demos there to try out. There were
That's
some
awesome.
Exceptions. I know James' demo of the show, Golden Sun DS,
oh!
was absent. So I couldn't take those 14 steps and watch the video or whatever. But, and I think the R-Toon game with Motion Plus Band Smasher was probably one of the only other sort of notable.
You didn't really miss that much.
Omissions.
But you got to play Sin and Punishment 2, right?
They did have Sin and Punishment 2, which made me feel better, because I don't think Europe has talked about Sin and Punishment 2 before. So, considering some things were absent, it was kind of reassuring to me that that was there. And so, yeah, I got to play it. I mean, they didn't have it on one of the better TVs. Like, there was a kind of hierarchy of TVs, and as you mentioned, like, when you guys were out there, like, the number of that was using composite cables is kind of shocking, considering that looks like absolute garbage.
This is a Nintendo event, too.
I know, well, some were clearly running in component, like, the more plush ones, like, for Wii Sports Resort and stuff, like, looked great in component, but then, you know, there was a lot of the new Super Mario Brothers stuff, and definitely Sin and Punishment 2, Endless Ocean 2 stuff that was running composite, which was a bit of a shame.
Was this only Nintendo published stuff, or was there third?
Yeah, it's a Nintendo event, so it's just their stuff, yeah. So, and like I said, it was almost all of their stuff, with a few exceptions. But Sin and Punishment 2, definitely enjoyed that. I mean, the demo is, you know, pretty sort of gentle in a lot of ways. I mean, you know, it's probably like the first level or one of the first levels, and then it's probably on the easiest difficulty setting, because I mean, funnily enough, even the Japanese original N64 game was set to easy and default,
yeah,
right? And the funny thing about that was is that because of all the Japanese text, a lot of people reviewed that game only playing it on easy, basically. And normal is substantially different from that, so I assume the final game may be quite different, in fact. But it was definitely, like, visually as busy as you would hope. There's so much stuff going on now, and of course you got the pointer control, so you can, you know, you feel really sort of liberated to shoot at all the kind of stuff you want. And then you got this floating ability, sort of in lieu of the double jump from the previous game, which makes it feel a bit closer to Star Fox than, like, the original was.
A little bit.
Because you can, you know, float around so much.
I can see that.
So, I mean, that was a bit different. I mean, I wonder, at some point, are they going to introduce, like, level designs or things where, like, there is an advantage more to being on the ground or, you know, something? Because otherwise I'm not clear why you wouldn't want to be in the air all the time. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wondered that a little bit too.
In the demo, it just seemed like, well, if you're in the air, you can still dodge sideways. You can even dodge up and down. So you're totally mobile, and you're free to sort of dodge all the stuff as much as you like. So I'm wondering whether perhaps later on in the game they're going to introduce bits where maybe, you know, you can do that for a while, but then they'll kind of bring you back down to earth and sort of change the gameplay up in that way or something.
Can you still use your sword in the air?
So
yeah, there's no disadvantage that I
could perceive in that demo anyway. But and then you've got this lock on that's a bit different, where you sort of like lock on and charge onto multiple targets and stuff, so that's new.
And each character has a different special
and
attack.
Yeah,
that
the
you
fact
that
you have you played as different characters in Sin and Punishment through the course of the story, they weren't selectable, you just played as different characters, but they didn't play any differently, whereas these are selectable.
Well, one of them
characters
transformed into a giant something.
Yeah,
right,
and he still played the same. He still shot.
Yeah, he's
really
like a giant something of himself.
But he just looked different. But in this, you've got selectable characters with different, somewhat different abilities, so that's different too. But, yeah, I mean, for me, the main thing was, the controls are working, you know, just as you would hope they would be. And, you know, it looks like it's going to be every bit as crazy as you'd like. And the score system is a bit different this time as well. And supposedly, at least according to the IGN guys, they are going to have online scores this time.
Cool.
Which I think would be really cool. I mean, I had an obscene score on my old Sin of Punisher. I'd love to see how that stacks up. I mean, you know, there's always a bigger fish, but I would like to see how that stands up. So that was great. I really loved to, you know, it was great to get hands on that stuff. But, I mean, obviously you guys have covered all the games, you know, plenty of detail, so I won't go into it too much. But
well, I mean, I'd still like to hear
Humor me.
Well, a few things.
What stood out to you?
I mean, a few things. In terms of the event in general, like, you know, it wasn't. It was almost like being at E3, the Nintendo booth at E3, apart from the fact that there weren't any queues. There were complimentary drinks. It was very nicely air conditioned. You played all the games next to a shallow swimming pool.
Nice.
Well, now that's kind of jealous of you.
So we're all going to London next year.
Great.
F3.
Yeah.
So it was like it was kind of like E3 followed me on my honeymoon, basically.
Oh, there was internet access.
Damn it! You could never have both worlds.
So, Greg, what other games stood out to you?
Well, so obviously I played pretty much everything there was to play of New Super Mario Brothers. You know, and that was pretty cool. I got to play some co-op with some other people that were there, you know, and that was, you know, worked as I sort of intended. You know, I guess we're all terribly polite over here, as you know, so there probably wasn't an immediate predisposition towards, you know, being a bit of a tit and, you know, hurting each other. But
so Greg, so is that game worth buying? You think? Because I've never played it, so I'm just very curious.
Well, I mean, to me, it's going to depend on, you know, the final content of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I noted with interest was that you had these 10 levels, but they were drawn from, you know, they weren't the first 10 levels, as you'd imagine. You know, they were drawn from different parts. And what I noticed was that for each world, right, the number of the world had the same theme as the same numbered world in the DS game, mm-hmm. right? So world 7 is the cloud world in the DS game, and the level in here with 7 in it was a cloud world as well. Mm-hmm. Same for the desert world, same for the ice world, you know, they were the same numbers.
Yeah.
So obviously they're not the same levels, but I really hope it's not literally like the exact same set of themes.
Yeah.
But doesn't the game have some obscene number of levels?
Well, they told us there would be over 80. And also, I think it's worth noting that in the roundtable, or so-called roundtable at E3, Miyamoto, in answering a question from the audience, said that some of the levels would be... He felt they would be very challenging even for experienced gamers. So he felt there was a good variety of challenge, whereas the DS game was really pretty easy all
the way
through. It
was. It definitely was. I mean, I think... Yeah. I mean, if it works the same way as the DS game, like if you have levels that are unlockable via the Star Coins, you know, you sort of purchase the ability to go to a different path.
That way of doing it. I would prefer the,
I prefer the
Super
secret
Mario
exit.
World.
Yeah.
Yeah, the secret way or something like that.
There were secret exits in the DS game as well, but not very many.
Not many. Yeah, they were usually like you had to beat a boss as Tiny Mario, which is
or there was
pain
I think some
ass.
Of the ghost houses maybe had a couple. Which is kind of a bit Super Mario Worldish, and there's a lot that is. This is definitely in many ways more like Super Mario World. Obviously, you've got Yoshi, who's back, and he's got his Mario World sound effects, but his flutter jump from Yoshi's Island. So they're kind of combining the two there.
It does feel like a master remix of every Super Mario game ever, you know?
Yeah.
It feels like they're taking something from just the entire back catalog.
Which is why, like I said, I would just hope that, like, level looks-wise, you know, they're not all just, you know, visually sort of identical to the DS game, you know, just maybe have some themes maybe borrowed from some other Mario games, but, it, you know, interpreted through the new Super Mario Bros. Look. But yeah, I mean, I was pretty, I enjoyed what I played of it for sure. You know, the level design seemed pretty cool. I mean, the only thing is, like, it was cool to have the Koopa kids and all that, but those boss battles were embarrassingly easy. I mean, they were just non-entities. Yeah. But I think those are the two fortress stages from the first world. So, I mean, you know, I wouldn't be expecting anything dramatically different. I did try out, like, Wii Sports Resort more than I thought I would because, you know, it was so easy to try everything. And I was really quite impressed. You know, it does seem like it was my first time, you know, getting my hands on Motion Plus and all that. you know, I was impressed with, you know, how effective it seemed and all, you know, pleased with that. But I thought, just because I had time, I thought, I'll try bowling. You know, if you was at E3, you would never dedicate time to trying bowling. I wouldn't anyway, because it just seems so trivially different.
You know, so I'm not even sure it was shown.
Really?
I don't remember hearing anyone talk about playing bowling.
You could pick it, but I don't see anybody do it.
Okay.
These demos even had the ESRB descriptors on them. You know what I mean?
They just shipped them
right.
Yeah. So, but so I tried the bowling, and you know, I'm not a big Wii Sports bowling guy or anything. I mean, I sort of developed like a pretty consistent sort of style and could bowl like upwards of 250 with a bit of, you know, with a couple games in.
Nice.
And then so I said, right, so yeah, let's see what's different. First ball, and it spun the other way and went in the gutter, and I was like, what? It's like something different is going on. So, I mean, what it may be basically the same game, but it definitely interprets your movements very differently. And after a while, I kind of adjusted and was going fine. But there is under the hood something different going on there. And it did feel like you had a more nuanced control over the actual spin of the ball and stuff. So that was kind of interesting, if not especially exciting.
The thing about bowling that strikes me as funny is that because it's a repeat from the first game, we're going to have a very direct comparison to make.
Yeah.
And if the primary difference with Motion Plus is that it's just more difficult, which seems like it's probably the case.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like there are all these awesome bowling moves that you couldn't do in the original because the control just was too crude.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really see what you could gain out of making the control more fine, except to make it more challenging. And I think in doing that, they're gonna kind of confuse the audience who really likes to play Wii Sports bowling, because people like that game because it's easy to play.
Yeah, you know? I would still say this is easy to play. I mean, for me, you know, it was just because I had this very specific technique of how I would spin the ball, you know, into the you know, the pins. And then that worked completely differently. And it didn't take me long to sort of unlearn that and then do it. You know, it works. It seems to be pretty straightforward. I mean, I just think the main reason why it's in there is probably, you know, for people who've got the disc in, you know, they just want them to be able to just be able to choose bowling because they still like that, you know, because that was like the game.
It'll be interesting to see what people think of that and how much people play that, because I understand redoing golf because it was pretty much
broken. Golf would be very different. The original. Yeah, that is different.
Bowling, I can't really see a whole lot of ways to improve the bowling experience in Wii Sports, except to allow you to play fewer frames so the games don't take an hour.
I didn't test out any options, or it didn't seem like it was any different in that regard. But I don't think it is to improve on it. It's just so that you can go to bowling without changing the discs. I mean, I honestly believe that.
That's pretty cynical, but I'll take it.
But at the same time, why not? I mean, how hard is it to include it? You know, I mean, you know, it seems like a pretty logical thing for me. And a couple other things. I did go quick little bit of time with Professor Layton sequel, which is, you know, mostly just watching the animated sequences, which are very nice. But Luke's voice is as awful as ever. I had headphones with me.
Good.
And
thank God.
It's abysmal. I mean, it's absolutely terrible. And this game is this game is huge in Europe now. There's no excuse. It's so bad. I think it's worse. It's just...
I think they'd be letting down all the fans by improving his voice.
There's just a certain expectation that his voice is going to sound like that.
I think I've got it.
I know. Oh, it's so...
For reasons that will go unsaid...
I don't think you can do it.
That game became high comedy every time I saw it at E3.
I don't think Johnny can actually do it as badly. I don't think it's actually in his capacity to be that bad. I got to play Spirit Tracks for a bit as well, which I actually quite liked. I didn't play all of the train sequence though, but the rest of it I thought was quite good. And Mario & Luigi 3, I'm really looking forward to that. The thing that's great about it is it does look, even that the style is the same, and in screenshots you won't notice that much difference, but it does look much, much less like a GBA game on DS now.
I think the artwork is fantastic.
Yeah, it
the
looks
artwork
really
and the animation
nice.
Are just so good.
Yeah, the animation definitely fantastic.
I mean,
and
when you look at something like Golden Sun DS, I mean, even as little as we've seen of it, and then you look at Mario and Luigi, you just wonder, like, what? Why would you even try to go 3D?
Yeah, I think it's playing to the DS's strengths, and like I said, now it's actually, you know, really using all of that. Whereas I think, you know, because probably Partners in Time was still, you know, it was an early game and all that, and it was very, you know, may well have been in development for GBA before it was in for development for DS, for all I know. And you know, it's going to be funny, and you know, all that. And I love the concept with Bowser and stuff, so that's definitely on my radar.
And the mini game, the little you know, special attack minigame type things that you do tend to use the touchscreen.
Yeah, they do.
And I think that'll help them keep from becoming so repetitive as they did in Partners in Time. That game,
yeah.
I mean, part of the, you know, a lot of the problem I had with Partners in Time is that it just became too complex after a while. You're doing these really, really complex button combinations, and it seems like you have to do everything four times, and it's just too many characters, too much of everything.
It was all sort of layered on top of each other, wasn't it? And I mean, I think the thing with this is because you're splitting time between Bowser and Mario, the battles will have a different feel, you know, you'll have this sort of separation between the two. So even if you're using special attacks a lot, you know, for a while you'll be using the touchscreen driven ones, and then for a while you'll be using the timing button press ones. And hopefully that'll just prevent from any kind of monotony really getting set in. So I think they've got a really cool concept there, and that's going to be really good. I really think so.
I'm very excited for it. I think it will have more variety.
Yeah.
All right. Well, James, are you ready now?
Yes.
Have you recovered?
That was, you have to admit, that was pretty terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not that bad. Look, it reads better than
Stop.
let's not revisit that.
I thought
that
it was goofy when they brought back the Jackal and Norman Osborn during the first time round.
It got worse though.
No.
Because now they brought Gwen Stacy back, and her and Norman Osborn had kids. It's fucked up.
It reads better than it sounds, guys.
Shut up,
I'm going to use that about a million times a day now. That article I wrote, it reads better than it sounds. That review reads better than it sounds.
No, it doesn't. All right, so what I've been primarily... Well, the only new thing I've played in the past week is Cyber Troopers Virtual On Oratorio Tangram.
Great title.
Yeah.
Sounds really mainstream.
Yeah, it's super mainstream. It's more mainstream than Peter Parker's clone.
Sounds like a casual game.
Oh, yeah, it's super casual. It's obviously a Virtual On game, which is a Sega franchise of giant mech one-on-one combat, essentially. It was a Dreamcast title, and then recently it was released on the Xbox Live Arcade. First off, I'm going to say it's not worth it. It's $12 on the arcade. It's
way overpriced.
Yeah, it is.
I think.
And the funny thing is, you know, I played the original, which was just Cyber Troopers Virtual On the arcade, in the arcade a lot when I was a kid. Like, a whole lot. And it was like $1 a play, which back in, like, 95, 96 was ridiculous. Like,
that's
that
really expensive, yeah.
That was a lot of money for an arcade game back then, although now it's kind of accepted. But it was, you know, it was one of those big one of Sega's units from the mid-90s, one of the big units you'd sit in with the giant controls and just ridiculous arcade cabinet. And I'm going to say that it's fine for what it is. It's a fun game, I guess. But the 360 controller is just not suited to this franchise. And I don't really think any controller is suited to this franchise. This franchise...
Well, maybe the Steel Battalion.
Well, yeah. And in fact...
Well, you need two big full-size joysticks to play this properly. That's the way it was in the arcade.
Yeah,
I mean,
and
it's played with tank controls like the old Battlezone game.
Yeah, or... I think it's the same system as Tokyo Wars.
Okay, I never played that one.
You can buy a control setup for this just for the 360 that Hori has made.
They made a controller for an Xbox Live Arcade game.
Yes, and it's expensive. It's like $75.
Well, yeah, I'm not surprised it's expensive. They couldn't have made more than 100 of them.
Yeah.
It's a Hori product. But if I had that, I would be very happy to have it because I think it would make this game a much more enjoyable experience. But, you know, I haven't played it that long. I started to get over the controllers, but it's not a real deep game. I mean, the arcade mode was 10 missions, and I breezed through them in an evening. There's a score attack mode, or I guess you just destroy as many units as you can before you get defeated. And then there's online battle. So the versus mode is really the arcade's mainstay of this game. So I guess that's what I really have to look forward to, is playing it online and trying to get high scores and stuff. But
until you get demolished by the guys who did actually buy
it. Paid $100 for the horse. Yeah. Hold on, I want to see how much this thing cost.
I need to have a little icon like in Mario Kart, so it'll be the wheel, like, but kind of like in reverse.
With the Hori icon beside it? The H?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you know you're going to get a shit can.
It's called... Yes, exactly. Basically, the whole premise of the game is it's third-person, over-the-shoulder shooter, essentially, where you're piloting a giant mech instead of a person.
And it's really fast. It's way faster than
it is
playing
a very
Core.
Fast game. And yeah. You know, it took me a while to get over the speed, but once I kind of got under control, I was able to breeze through it. So actually, I got shit-canned by the AI around level 3 about 4 or 5 times until I finally went and watched the tutorial. And I kind of understood what I needed to do better. And I was able to, through the glory of infinite unpaid continues, push through to the end of the game.
Yeah.
Now, James, have you ever played any of the custom Robo games?
Yes.
How do they compare?
Not as fast. It's kind of the same premise. Mm-hmm. But this game is just absurd. I have a feeling that if you're really good at this game, you can make other people's lives miserable. Oh, also, the Hori stick is $300.
Good Whoa. God. Whoa. To play a $15 download game.
Wow.
Well, it makes the game's actual price seem a lot more reasonable, doesn't it?
I wouldn't even buy the controller for Ace Combat. Like I have my limits. And that was only $99.
Even James has
and
his
it's Ace Combat.
Even I have my Ace Combat limits, yes.
Well, we're going to wrap up New Business with John Lindemann.
Oh God,
and
sorry,
he's been playing some
John
really
yet.
Old games, right?
Yeah, I've gone actually a little bit old school this week. On the Virtual Console, they released Space Harrier, the arcade version.
Finally. Took long enough, didn't it?
Yeah, how long has it been out in Japan? It's been out for a while, hasn't it?
It was like the second week or something of VC arcade, really quite a while ago.
Yeah. Well, I have a long history with this game because this was one of the games I kind of like fell in love with when I was about, 12 or 30, whatever. But yeah, like and it's funny. This was kind of like, I think you can probably trace, I was thinking about as I was playing it, I was like, what is it about this game that really appeals to me? And I think you can probably trace my interest in first person shooters back to this game because
I thought he was going to say the never-ended story.
Exactly. That's funny. That is completely an influence too. It's funny going back to these old games from the 80s and seeing and just being like, okay, that was obviously influenced by Top Gun. That was obviously influenced by Commando.
Hold on. No. What is Space Harrier have to do with Neverending Story?
It's got the bonus stage is like basically a Falcor, the flying dragon.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. The luck
you
dragon.
Basically hop
nice.
On him and demolish some stuff and get bonus points.
But it's lives. Yeah, it's so obviously like a complete bite from that movie.
By the way, if you really like the Neverending Story, do yourself a favor and never watch the sequel. Or sequels. Yikes. No, just watch the first one over again. Make up your own stories. Make up your own sequel.
Make up
it
your
will
own
be better than
story.
What they made.
Just read the book.
Oh, we always felt that oversold it, so.
But,
yeah, it definitely has an ending.
Exactly, the worst case of
John is definitely not still watching it.
Yeah, so wait, John, you when you played this in your relative youth, did you play the arcade game, or did you play the Master System game, or both? Or
no, I played the arcade game.
Good
this
man.
Was because this was back when Sega was really. I think they released. I was thinking about it. And I was thinking that Space Harrier probably uses the Outrun engine or vice versa, because it's the
all
same
those
kind
super
of
super scalar games like Afterburner and all that came out fairly close
like,
ago. I don't
all
know
of those kind of
first.
Like faux 3D games where they did the
yeah,
sprite
where
scaling.
Perspective is coming in. Yes.
Yeah. So it's from that kind of like generation. But a lot of those games are really really good, and like Thunderblade was another one.
Thunderblade.
Yeah.
Thunder.
You know, whatever.
Yeah. See, I wonder what this game's about.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. I mean, actually, come to think of it, every single one of those games was pretty much the same. They were all 3D shooters.
Except
so, but,
Outrun.
Yeah. But it was funny because I was thinking of, Greg actually talking about Sin and Punishment 2. And Sin and Punishment, I mean, it is completely like, it's really an updated version of Space Harrier.
But
yeah,
with
that's true.
The difference is the separation of where you position and where you can shoot, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because with Space Harrier, you think that like a lot of the jeopardy in the game is like, okay, well, if I'm going to shoot that thing, I'm going to have to be right in front of it to do that. And of course, if you are, then you're vulnerable to being shot at. So you kind of have to constantly move around all the time and sort of like, you know, make little passes over like bosses and stuff, like, you know, so that's kind of, that's whereas with Sin and Punishment, like you could move all over the place and stay constantly, your actual fire would be fixed at the same target. So I mean there's definite similarities there, but there's a sort of key difference as well.
Yeah, it's just interesting kind of like looking back at that game and how many games it has probably influenced since. Yeah, and really not even, I mean, that's kind of, I think it's one of an it's kind of like an unheralded game in Sega's catalog. I mean, it was big kind of at the time, like it got like a lot of sequels to it, like especially on consoles, but
yeah, it was the Genesis one.
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, it's kind of like a forgotten series now, so it was kind of really interesting to play it again. And also, you know, I was able
to... John, have you been playing it with pointer controls?
It's got pointer controls.
Oh,
I think Space Harrier has some sort of weird, like, control setup where you can use, like, the nunchuck motion sensor or something. Like, there is some weird Wii controls, but it's not pointer controls.
Which, exactly, you would think it would make sense, but... But no, so yeah, I mean, it was pretty cool. You know, I played through the whole thing, you know, with, once again, the magic of Unlimited Continues.
Well, what I did is I just sort of set a limit of continues after a while and just kind of, you know, work towards it.
Yeah.
You know, just so I wouldn't blow through it completely. But, you know, when you... I mean, it's 800 points. It's not the cheapest, obviously.
No, I mean, I wouldn't recommend it for anybody but hardcore fans of the series. Just because, I mean, you can get... much better games than that for $8.
Yeah, I mean, value for, like, you can get Super Mario RPG for 800 points. Yeah. Obviously, completely different experiences, but in terms of bang for your buck, you know, there isn't really a comparison.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it definitely.
Oh, by the way, John, in terms of probably what will come out in about 3 months, what came out in Japan from Sega.
Welcome to your doom.
Altered Beast.
Nice.
So you've got that to look
in the arcade version.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's the whole thing. That game was never really replicated on consoles very well. Anywhere, really.
The Genesis version, I think, is kind of...
Yeah, because it was a launch
considered
game.
...to be borked and...
Yeah, it was funny. There was actually a guy in my high school. He was about 6'5", but he had a really small head. So we used to call him Altered Beast. We used to call him Altered Beast because he had a big body and a really small head like you did in Altered Beast. You know, when you
John, if you had, if you'd gone to high school in a different decade, you might have called him Gula.
Oh God! Oh,
yeah, with me, you have to talk about decades, I guess. So
yeah, and you would have to have seen and, in some sense, appreciate the f-ing Mario movie,
which I do. I like it.
Yeah. So I mean, if you're a big fan of Space Harrier, by all means, go nuts. But I mean, it's a complete quarter muncher. I mean, you play the game and you're like, wow, this is hard as hell. Like, I don't know why I even played it.
Yeah, it gets busy, doesn't
it?
It gets real busy, real fun.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, it's like when monsters shoot at you, they usually shoot fireballs at you, especially the bosses. They shoot fireballs at you, and it's very hard to gauge when the fireball is
going to be...
Yeah,
you have to learn that,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to kind of get used to it.
It's a bit of a bullet hell game.
This scaling thing, you know, you just kind of have to get used to judging it because it's obviously very artificial. You know?
And the other game I've been playing is actually, this is one of those classic things where, you know, every once in a while, up where I work now by my office, there's a Toys R Us. So I'll walk in there just to see what they have in their bargain bin. And so I walked in there a couple of days ago, and they had a copy of Fire Pro Wrestling Returns for the PS2.
Oh, yeah.
And I have never played a Fire Pro Wrestling game, but I'm a big pro wrestling fan. Not really too much lately, because I just, you know, but kind of like in that whole sort of Stone Cold Steve Austin's when I kind of got back into it for a little while. But, yeah, so I just said, I mean, the game was $5. And so...
You got taken.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you're... That's the thing. It's funny, because it's like, I mean, pretty much every single review that I read about it was, if you're kind of like a pro wrestling nut, you will love it. If not, you'll hate it. And I mean, I think it's great because, you know, it's the amount of moves you can do. There's something like 1,600 different moves that you can assign to your player. It's just insane, but incredibly old school. I mean, doesn't even try to cater to anything beyond maybe like 1990. you know?
I mean, the series started back in the late 80s.
Yep.
Isn't it pretty much like Pro Wrestling NES, but with better graphics?
Yeah,
you can pretty much say that.
I might be down with that.
What it reminds me of is the old tag team wrestling. Remember that game for NES?
Yeah.
I think it was by Data East. That's going way, way back.
My first run-in with the Fire Pro Wrestling series is Super Fire Pro Wrestling, which was, as one would expect, on the SNES.
Yes.
But there was a Game Boy game back in, like, 90.
There were several for GBA.
Yeah, there was
Majesco
there
published.
Was actually, I think it started on, like, the PC Engine.
Yeah, it did. I mean, I was reading up on it, and there's a kind of a greatest hits collection coming out for Wii. And it has, like, 20 games on it or something, like 15 to 20 games.
They're doing, like, a Fire Pro Wrestling greatest hits.
Yep.
Oh, there aren't. There just aren't.
Yeah, but it's so funny. It's like every single game, it's like you can tell all the ones from the Super NES, they're virtually all the same game. It's like,
yes,
you know, Super Fire Pro Wrestling, Super Fire Pro Wrestling Z, Super Fire Pro Wrestling
X,
Tag Team. Yeah, yes. It's like exactly. It's like they're all, you can tell they're all the same game with like very small variations. But yeah, you know, I'm enjoying it. It's kind of hard to learn. I mean, it doesn't do anything. I mean, it is completely for the pro wrestling nut that wants to scroll through 1,500 different moves and pick exactly what they want to make their character. But the cool thing about it is there's actually if you use stuff like, what is it, the action replay, like some of the things that let you like download like PC like saves onto your PC, like PS2 saves onto your PC and then copy them. You can actually, I mean, people have gone through and made every single wrestler from every single league.
Well, it's funny because there was a lot of notable clones of professional wrestlers.
Yeah, there are.
Games.
Yep. Like a lot of the guys, like, you know, guys like, you know, Scott Hall, Diesel, there's like kind of like a Hulk Hogan looking guy. And the thing is, the funny thing is too, is that even though they don't have the actual wrestlers in there, they have all of their moves. So it's like, you know how Hulk Hogan does the thing where he puts his hand to his ear to like hear the crowd or whatever. It's completely in the game, but Hulk Hogan is not in that game. So they've basically specifically made that game so that people can make their favorite wrestlers, which I think is pretty cool.
Alrighty. Well, we have survived a 5-man new business segment.
Jesus.
We're going to take a much-needed break now and come back with some
reminiscence.
Memorization.
Memorializing of,
not dead.
Of the past. Well, anyway, we're going to look back at some of our favorite moments from RFN history in just a moment. Back for part two of this special episode 150, and actually I'm gonna turn this over to Greg here in a sec. He has prepared some audio clips from episodes past, and most of us don't really know what's in these, so he's gonna let us just react to them, I guess, and then I guess a little later we'll kind of maybe go around and talk about some of our favorite moments if they haven't already come up.
I don't know how many of these are gonna be anyone's favorite moments.
these aren't so famous as they are infamous.
Yes, definitely in the infamy category, but yeah, so it's time to fire up the old Wayback Machine. We're taking a trip back in time to discover the origins of the RFN you know and love today. We're not going to cover the same ground as we did in episode 100 or in episode 52, the original birthday special.
That's right.
I'd certainly advise going back to those because those episodes are great and they cover a lot of the stuff about how the podcast was started by Evan and Mike and, you know, and then Stan and Carl came in and all that sort of stuff. So that's great. But we're going to focus on, you know, the current crew and the genesis of that. But you got to go pretty far back to where we started. You go all the way back to episode 5, which is where Johnny makes his first appearance.
Oh, yeah.
I was worried this would come up.
Awesome.
So this was Evan interviewing Johnny via cell phone, I believe. This is how Mr. Metz was introduced to the podcast world. James, roll number one.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you very much, Johnny, for coming in and standing in today. And there's some interesting things covered. You know, I'm tempted to start a thread in the forum just to continue the discussion.
Well, so, I just want to tell people that I'm not always this serious. And one day, hopefully, I'm going to... like host the podcast with you guys and really cut it up and go crazy because
so when's that gonna happen?
And I am known to do that on occasion.
He has been known to go a little crazy. I have to
be in the right mood and it has to be the right forum. And right now it's a little too early in the morning for me to.
That forum is called Bonnaroo.
Go nuts, but yeah. I can do it. I can be funny. I
one day, just keep saying it, Johnny. Eventually, someone will believe you. Eventually, you know, I'm sorry, friend.
Those who were listening to Radio Trivia
here
two or three weeks ago will know when I started talking about, you know, the giant crab in the PS3 demo.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I started talking, you know, since that was ostensibly taken from ancient Japanese history.
Yes, exactly.
I started talking about how Godzilla defeated the crab, but since it was like, you know, thousands of years ago, Godzilla was wearing a Roman centurion's helmet because he had come across the Pacific and the Atlantic from Italy, where he had been fighting in the Roman Empire, and he had led a... you know, a centurion is a commander and he has a squadron of 100 soldiers, except Godzilla's soldiers were all baby Godzillas.
All right, so to make a comment here...
I just made Zach Miller's head explode, by the way.
In the talkback of this podcast, there is a picture that I made like 3 years ago of a DS title... of Godzilla wearing a centurion helmet.
Oh, snap. That has to go in the chapter art for this episode.
I have never heard Godzilla lore be announced so dryly and like nonchalantly.
Well, you see, it's a radioactive dinosaur. He comes out of the ocean, destroys the entirety of Tokyo.
Yeah.
It's like Charlie Rose trying to, like, you know, announce
a lot of people didn't realize that Godzuki was actually a grunt, you know, one of many just disposable heroes for the Roman Empire.
Yes. It sounds like you're reading, like, Wikipedia or, like, a
who says he was?
Oh, man.
Exactly.
What can I say? I've grown over hundreds of podcasts, and I've grown to be a lot more comfortable on the air, and I've developed my radio voice.
Evan was on a cell phone, right?
No, yes. I was on it. Well, I mean, yeah, we both were, and yeah. I had my computer microphone taped to my cell phone, and we did
oh
this.
My
at,
God.
I had class that morning, so we did this at like 7 in the morning. I had just woken up. I felt like shit, and we, you know, I don't even know how long we talked. I haven't listened to that episode in forever. I think
it's about 45 minutes long.
Back then that was very short.
But back then that was long for an RFN. I mean,
it was the longest.
Most RFNs were half an hour.
It's not that I wasn't verbose back then, but I just wasn't all that comfortable and, you know, wasn't speaking very naturally like I am now.
And
so.
Of course, when you refer into Radio Trivia, that was the live version. You know, it wasn't a podcast edition at that point.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
No,
yeah, so I mean, unfortunately, the original Godzilla conversation is not, it's not recorded for posterity. It was that was on a live.
It was from a Radio Trivia I was listening to back when I wasn't staff, thinking to myself, "This is a disaster. What's going on?"
Yeah, but I mean, I think that just proves why you should never recount something funny that you said one other time in order to prove that you are actually capable of being funny.
In order to prove that you're a funny person.
Yeah, no. I mean, hopefully I have proven in other ways over the years that I can be a funny guy and I can loosen up. The whole reason I even went into that topic at the end of that show was that I was really self-conscious that over the course of this sort of interview that Evan did with me, that I came across as being like really stoic and kind of dry. And I felt like, you know, partly it was my... lack of comfort in the format, and partly it was the time of day and the conditions that we were doing it and everything, and, you know, just lack of experience. So That's kind of why I went into that, but it, you know, not successfully. But.
Okay, thanks, Abe Lincoln.
It wasn't too long before Johnny was on the show pretty regularly. After that, especially
I was kind of the Steve Martin of radio.
Oh, yeah.
To know, because I wasn't a regular cast member, but I showed up really often.
You have your own room.
When Carl was hosting Post Pirate Radio,
yes.
Johnny was pretty regular, but it didn't take us too long to discover what Johnny meant when he said he wanted to go nuts on the podcast.
Oh, hey, it's an IM from Johnny. I wonder what it says.
Fuck.
What? A new trailer for Metroid Prime 3? I'm going to click on this and watch it all the way through.
Oh, no. Jesus.
Don't play the entire thing, please.
Oh, God.
Will no stranger love.
How did you find this?
You know the rules.
I played it like once.
Do I. For commitments, what? Figure it out. You would not this from any other guy.
I would try to sing along now, but I'm worried about the syncing issues that Greg would have with it.
We can add in post.
Understand. Never gonna give you my heart. Never gonna let you down.
Never gonna roll around and desert you.
Oh, that's enough, please.
Never gonna let you down.
Never
gonna
let you down. I don't know what that's about at all. Honestly, I'm just kidding. Oh wait, there's more to the video.
Good evening, this is Rick Astley. Sorry, but our princess is another castle. You've been Rickrolled.
Rickrolled? Rickrolled?
No.
Yes, right. This was back closer to the actual Rickroll fad.
Yeah.
This was a topical.
Let me attempt to explain this.
You've been
Metro. Back when this commercial aired on Radio Free Nintendo, we thought we had to do commercials for the show to kind of break up the monotony of it, and you know, because it's so tedious to listen to this fucking show. And so
it's a chore, believe me.
Yeah, it was mostly Stan and myself who would end up doing these commercials, which is how you got things like Sweet Pete. And really, me in a really bad, like, Latin accent talking about maracas. And
Evan Birchfield commercial is still my favorite.
Oh, you had the Wii Theater that Johnny did, like, Elabits.
Oh, yeah. Brufus, all right?
Brufus. Yeah.
And I still would like to keep doing those. I just don't have time anymore.
Yeah.
It's very, very creatively challenging and very time-consuming to do those
things.
And,
I mean, you clearly put all of yourself into that.
Oh, yeah.
And then
I mean, that was...
But see, I always kind of took it a little too... I kind of always kind of ran them over. Like, for example, with this one, I let the entire, like, 45-second clip play. Or, like...
Like that.
Yeah, exactly. Or when we had David Hayter do a bump for us. What's it called?
Solid Snake.
What's it called? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I did it in like a little mini skit. I remember John just being like, "That sucked, dude. You gotta just like lay off that shit." And so yeah, it was always really, really, really bad when we did those. But it's funny to say because I was talking to Stan the other day because we were reminiscing a little bit about our past days on RFN, and he was talking about how much he wanted to do new commercials for the show. So maybe, I don't know, it depends on A, whether or not the crew actually
I would
wants
love them. It. I would love for you guys to do some commercials for us.
That would be awesome.
I would love to contribute or do some of my own.
Yeah.
You know, when I get a chance,
So
they're really fun. They're very, very challenging to do. To do comedy is, I think, a lot more difficult than most people realize. If you ever try it, you'll be like, wow, this is tough.
My favorite recurring one was Man Cakes.
Oh God!
And which is
man cakes?
It came out of a conversation that Stan, Evan, and myself had, where obviously we were talking about like something, and Evan like said beefcake just randomly.
Oh God! I don't
and like
stop.
Oh like a man cake, and it just kind of rolled down the hill from there. And
that's a bad choice of words there.
Yeah. So this is what it was like when you were rolling with Birchfield, man. But
well, to wrap up the Rickroll discussion, I just will say you probably won't be surprised to hear that I have done this song numerous times at karaoke live, and
wonderful.
It is a pretty big hit. I mean,
I'm a pretty big deal.
People, because people, no. I mean, people get the joke, and they just, you know, that song is so ubiquitous now. Mm-hmm. People really like that.
Yeah. Oh,
a live Rickroll is
amazing. To be fair, it is awesome.
And I love hearing Greg's appreciation of it because I feel like it's actually really heartfelt.
He really sold it. He sold it.
We're going to get on to the next bit now, with mainly focusing on us, as you know, you'd expect. But we've got Carl here, and you know, Carl is largely responsible for the current lineup as it is, actually. So the first thing I want to do is one of my favourite Carl moments that was mentioned back in episode 100, but we didn't have it in the highlight reel, so I thought I'd bring it back here.
Oh, yay.
Okie doke, welcome back to RFN, and talking about our feature, which is how does Nintendo's image and its practice in America relate to its Japanese counterpart?
No.
Now, Ty, you've lived in America for some time.
Oh, God.
If I remember.
That's true. I can't deny that, officer.
And you moved to Japan when?
September.
It sounds like an interrogation.
So you've been there for a while, and what have you noticed in your travels?
In 10 words or less.
In 2 words or less.
2 words or less. Good lord.
Oh, I was so sure you were going to say sideways vaginas.
Oh yes, let me let you in on a little secret.
Where did that come from?
Japan. Yeah. Japanese girls have sideways vaginas.
See, your first mistake there was getting Ty on the show.
Yes, because here's the thing. Ty is not
a team player.
Your
second mistake was letting him talk.
All I hear from everyone is, oh, Ty's the funniest motherfucker alive. Get him on that show. So I'm like, let's get Ty on
it's
the
like
show.
Pulling
it'll
teeth.
It'll be so much fun to finally get him on the show. He'll be wacky. It'll be great. He is not a team player. He clammed up that entire episode.
No, because you have to understand, to him...
Well, I think he was just fucking with
him. Yeah, him to say as little as possible on Radio Free Nintendo, or whatever we were calling it then, was hilarious.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because in his mind, he is fucking up your show big time.
Oh, yeah. Like, basically, that entire segment was based on him being able to kind of take the reins and just kind of talk about his time in Japan. Just like complete, it was one word answers, and like, oh yeah, it was pretty cool.
I think you were spoiled by the Johnny Metroid episode. You know,
oh,
you was
yeah,
hoping
yeah,
for
yeah.
that,
oh,
but,
yeah.
but you know, sort of
because that was the opposite, where like I literally had to grab the reins away from Johnny so that we could take a break.
Before Carl actually kind of essentially set the cast for what would become quote unquote season 2 of the show, he did just randomly invite me on.
Yes.
But when I was like, I'd been on staff for like a week.
Yeah.
And this is one of my favorite moments from my first appearance on the show.
Well, moving on to the most interesting of subjects, the Hitman movie is getting an R rating. Who cares?
It's coming out like in 2 weeks.
Surely this shouldn't be news, though. I mean, it should just be an R rating. It's only because there was
Hitman.
Exactly, it's only because there was this suspicion that they was gonna sort of water it down really badly.
The commercial, like they try and make it sound all cool, and there's this exchange where he's talking to a girl and he says, "Where I grew up, they didn't give us names, only numbers." And she says, "What was your number?" And his reply is 47.
69.
No, he says like majority. 47. Like it's supposed to be. Really fucking
like, by the way, that segment is more than ever needed to be said about that movie.
Yeah. I'm glad we don't do, like, random news anymore.
We used to do, because in the same episode we did, like, the Prince of Persia movie. I guess that was a Mike thing.
Mike really wanted to talk about Prince of Persia. But, we used to kind of just do random news about that. But really, the reason why I really
want... A lot
of
Wei Bowl stuff.
I've always been of the opinion, and I think Johnny shares my opinion on this, is that I love having accents on the show.
Yes.
So, Greg is going to have a lovely English accent.
And since
so
I've
like,
mostly
on.
Lost mine, I need to
exactly.
seek out others.
Nice. I think we had Lasse, Paulson
yeah,
on the show.
The European the Leipzig convention. I remember
I
that.
Him
Lasse did a nice job. I'd like to have him back sometime. Yeah. I'm not sure that he's not very active with the site anymore. So.
No.
Right. And I had asked Carly if she wanted to be on the show as well, but she turned me down saying, "Don't you realize what time it would be over here?"
She has a point.
You know, yeah. Funnily enough, though, the first time we recorded together, it was like 7 in the evening for me.
Because that's what it used to be. In the afternoon. We would record like Tuesdays, I think, at probably 7 or maybe even 6 o'clock in the afternoon.
No, 7 in the evening for me. You were recording you were recording in the afternoon
for you.
You
guys must have done it on the weekend or something.
No. You were coming in from class or something. You know, it was actually early. It was the one time that I recorded the show early.
You'll notice, you have to notice, whenever I was host, very accommodating. Gotta say that about myself. Very accommodating.
Yeah, well, I think one of the best things that we've done in the past year or so is move to like an ultra consistent recording schedule.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there actually been a number of times when we've tried to get guests or we want to get some staff members who aren't on the show very often. And, you know, sometimes we actually try that and we can't work it out on schedule wise because our weekly recording time is just so solid, and it's very difficult for us. You know, I mean, we do this every single week, so we kind of build our lives around doing it at a certain time.
Absolutely,
it's very hard for us to move it to
and the editing is the other factor.
Oh yeah,
in terms of getting it done afterwards in some sort of timely fashion.
Definitely, and something else that I want to commend you guys on is that this show has come out on a very consistent basis. Like I remember for a while, it was coming out like a Tuesday here, a Thursday there.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And but really though, since for a while now, the show's been coming out very, very consistently. And so that's something that
we'll work on that.
Well, when I was editing, you know, I would I'll admit it, like sometimes the show wouldn't get up on time, or maybe there would be like two shows in a week, just inexplicably. So yeah, that's something I really think deserves a commendation, just because the show's been really, really great and it's been really, really tight lately. So
yeah, well, it was something we were aiming for, but now we're going to get to the moment where the handover of power was made in an orderly fashion, in a rigorously organized fashion that would be worthy of any of the world's finest institutions.
So, that's what makes America great.
So James, roll number 5, please.
So, all right, guys. I mean, literally, I could go on all freaking day about you know, cherished memories at the site, but maybe for my actual last show,
which was this show, feature, by the way,
we can just talk about this shit.
The best of we'll find the best of Carl quotes and we'll just string them all together and it'll be like, awesome.
You can do a drinking game for every time I say anyway.
Ooh yeah,
or on the other side of this break,
or on the other side of this break, or stay tuned, or any of one of my various categories.
Oh god, it took me so long to get you weaned off of stay tuned.
I still say it. I say
there's
it
nothing to stay tuned to. It's an MP3 or an AAC.
It's like a classic radio, like.
It's like tuning your attention.
Yeah.
So, Don't Carl, turn... what's going to happen to the show?
Well, I have offered the host spot to you, Johnny.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You've heard of it. I don't know.
Oh shit!
Who's our community manager? And he says he's going to be able to edit it.
I was.
Sweet.
So he's going to take on my producer credit, because right now I'm host, producer, and writer for the show.
I'm just the talent.
Yeah, Mike's just he just brings the face. Yeah. the face of radio. And our good old buddy in the UK, Greg Leahy, is going to be our second chair.
Well, that's awesome, because Greg is amazing.
Greg's awesome.
I talked to him once, and I fucking love him. He's awesome.
Greg is...
Yeah, so we're going to start our own little one-up yours here. So I'll be like the drunken older guy.
No, that's
hosting.
John.
Sure. That's
and
me
then
now.
Literally. European sophisticated guy.
You can play John. And then the other two guys are frequently are just always in flux because they're always going to be hired at better jobs.
That hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, that has not happened at all.
Craig, well, you've got to get a better job, man.
Oh,
well, that's not true because I went from community manager to features
to
editor.
Features
I actually
editor.
Have a worse job now.
You certainly do less work.
I think we've all had job title changes since we started doing this.
So it's cushier in that respect.
Actually got more respect as community.
I'm pretty sure before Carl did talk to me before that episode was recorded.
Yeah, I had. Here's a little inside baseball for you guys. Before, when we had left, it was going to be Evan, Mike, and myself. We're going to start up a new podcast and then do that. That was our plan at first. Of course, that never really materialized because we were all kind of busy with other things. But when we had realized that when Mike and I both kind of decided that we were going to be taken off, I kind of scattered around to see who was going to be the editor, because when I was kind of in the heyday of when I was on, we had, you know, Mike could edit, Evan could edit, I could edit. When Stan was on, yeah, he could edit. So we had a lot of different people who were able to take on that responsibility. But when I was leaving, I'm like, well, I know Johnny doesn't really edit, so that's out.
Yeah, and I didn't want to.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't want to say.
There was audible relief in clip.
There was that, and then I remember that I think James had edited like one of the radio trivias or something.
Well, there's a side story there, because Windy only hired me as community manager because he found that I had worked in video editing at one point. He had nothing to do with the application I put in, which later he admitted was the only application we got. and he didn't say that to me privately either. He said it at the first staff meeting where I was full staff. It was nice. Like a nice way to introduce yourself to the rest of the staff, official status.
He's a people person,
yeah.
That Windy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my god. But, seriously, if you want to listen to something funny, go to episode 40. And Windy and I are literally at each other's throats that entire show.
The Lords of Thunder episode.
I can remember really being intrigued to hear the Bit Generations episode because I wanted to buy some of those. Uh-huh. And I did end up buying some of those. But Jesus Christ, he killed that show.
Oh my god. Here's the funny thing about that actual show. Stan lost his audio for that show, but we both said so fucking little that he was actually able to re-record it during the editing.
Wow. Pretty colossal.
So there's that.
Before we move on, I kind of want to... This is something I was going to bring up later anyway, but since we're on the topic, I wanted to talk about how we ended up with the current crew. Now, it's a little fuzzy for me. I mean, it was a year and a half ago, and you know, this current crew has, as of now, done half of the episodes.
70.
We've done more episodes than any of the previous kind of groupings did. So it's interesting how it all came together. I know that I was sort of interested in hosting anyway. I mean, I you know, being the
you said your first
director,
episode. The first time on the show, you want to host.
I think back then, I didn't literally mean host as in be the guy in charge of. I meant
co-host,
be on the
yeah.
episode. That was semantics. But, I mean, by this point, I had been on the show a lot. You know, I knew that Carl and Mike and Evan were all kind of drifting away from the site around the same time. And so I thought, well, you know, this is something I really like to do. And I'm kind of interested in, you know, maybe taking a crack at being a host of this thing if they move on. So Carl and I had kind of discussed that. I was a little concerned about who would edit it. Carl went out and talked to James about it and said, no problem, this new guy James, he'll do it for you. I was like, okay, cool. So I guess James will be on the show.
And we all loved Greg.
I'm pretty sure it was my idea to bring on Greg, because I really liked you know, hearing him from when he was on the show the first time. Mm-hmm. And I think he had done a radio trivia also. And also
I had done the radio trivia.
James had done radio trivia.
Yeah, I know I was very impressed with James's work on radio trivia, and so I was like, yeah, let's put him on there. Let's try Greg, because I liked him from
that one
from
time.
The first
yeah.
time he was on. And then, you know, John had not been on. I'm not sure if you had ever been on.
Oh,
yeah,
he had been on multiple
times. Oh, no, he
had.
As you will hear pretty soon.
So
that's coming up right next.
Okay, well, I had known John for years, back since, like, 2001. So, you know, I thought, you know, John's a really good guy. We have a good rapport. So let's put him on there. And when we did the first episode, it was kind of like the first week or two of the new year when we came back from Christmas break, and that was our first episode as a new unit. I did not really expect that lineup to stick. I mean, you know, we had never tried it before. I'd never really talked to Greg at length. I'd never really talked to James at all. And you know, John didn't have a whole lot of podcast experience. I mean, none of you guys did. And I didn't even know if I was going to make it as a host. So I put that together as sort of an experiment. I thought, let's put on three other guys who, you know, let's just move into a completely new cast of three different guys. I'll be the link between the old and the new, and we'll see if it works. And I fully expected that we'd probably have to switch out one or two people after a couple
weeks. When I agreed to do the show, that was the operating philosophy, was that there's going to be swapped out a lot, and eventually we were going to come together with the cast.
Right, because before that, the lineup rotated very frequently. From week to week, you might have completely different people on.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's how it was.
Well,
yeah,
the funny thing is, Johnny, I remember with that show, it's like you basically, like, it's not like you had come to me beforehand and said, hey, John, I'm thinking about bringing you on the show. What do you think about it? I get an email out of nowhere saying, this is going to be the lineup of the new podcast. Basically, if you don't want to be on it, let me know. And I was like, okay. Yeah. Just don't hurt me.
It's funny because when I was asked to be on it, I was asked to be on it, and then the immediate question came after was, can you edit it? Like, I had just gotten the yes.
Yeah, I didn't want to be a dick and say, oh, hey, do you want to edit the new show? I was like, hey, man, I heard you on Radio Trivia. You're really cool. Do you want to be on the show? And he was like, yeah, okay, I'll be on the show. I'm like, cool, so you're the editor now.
Like, the Radio Tree episode had only gone up, like, 2 days before I got asked to do
well,
that.
Well, that shows you the fucking dearth of people that we had to go to. Like, there was really
Thanks.
No one else.
Yeah, it was, like you said, it was incredible how everyone who had ever done that job went in a mass exodus pretty much at the same time.
So it was time for new blood, and like I said, it was really a grand experiment. I haven't gone back and listened to the first episode
I just remember it being really awkward.
I actually have notes as well. I'll go through them.
Oh, do you have notes? Oh, I
yeah.
Do this.
These okay. Oh, the, wow. These okay. are these are my notes. This was episode 82. This was the season 2 premiere. Basically, I thought that the start of the show was so awkward because there's one point. If you go back, there is one point where everybody kind of chimes in right at the start and like says something. I forget exactly what the topic is, but I think Greg finishes it off, and there's this pause, and then Johnny comes in. He's like, okay, all right then. It's just like the podcast completely dies at one point. Johnny's like, all right then, okay.
Back then, new business was a lot more curt. Yes. It was just like, I played this.
Well, that's what it was supposed to be from the beginning. We had started new business. Okay, we had gotten so many complaints from people about what you've been playing being like 3 hours long when it had no.
It was
when we had nothing
you
new.
Never did a 3 hour long.
Okay,
your shows were never that long. You had a show. You
whatever.
Had a show called The Epic, which was 1 hour and 20 minutes long.
Because it was really long. Anyway, that aside, that fucking aside. All right. It had basically become like a 45-minute segment.
It was 1 hour 10 today. So.
Yeah, versus an hour now. But see, at least you guys have like new stuff. It's interesting. It's good. But at the time, we were like, so I played Zelda. Like this is like 2008, and so yeah, it was getting really really bad. So people were like, well, maybe we should just cut it. And so we thought about like, yeah, maybe we should just cut it. But we should have something in case we have, you know, we actually did play something new. Thus. "Quote unquote new business," which is basically if you have new business, you say something. If you don't have anything, you just skip it.
Right.
Clearly,
yeah,
that sentiment.
Occasionally, we do skip over, but it doesn't always work. But when it's really good, it gives us a chance to really play off of each other. We ask each other questions. We make jokes. Preferably, it's a game that you know more than one of us has played.
Lords
that's
of Thunder
not always
is a good
the
example
case.
Of that.
Yeah, exactly. That would have never happened.
That
would so that's why I like new business.
Definitely.
And I think sometimes it does go on too long, but I think Greg has been pretty proactive in trimming it,
cut,
you know, very selectively and judiciously.
Well, you know, it's funny because new business works when we've all played a game and we have things to make fun of about it or talk about it jokingly,
mm-hmm.
or when
mm-hmm.
I've had a very terrible review copy.
Mm-hmm.
That,
no,
that's
we'll
really
get to that. That is coming, I guarantee
you. I'm sure
that.
It is.
We need to rejoin the story as it was going. So, yeah, so John was not handpicked by Carl to be in the show. And, you know, apparently this wasn't really the basis of it. But maybe somewhere in someone's subconscious, they were thinking about this outstanding debut that he made in episode 12.
Oh, God.
Oh, dear God.
Excellent.
No.
This is Evan and Lindy. This is Evan and Lindy.
Yeah. Copyright laws be damned.
Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Radio Free Nintendo. I am your host, Evan Birchfield. I'm only your host for this week because Mike Sklenz is out.
Evan.
I think he's counting ballots in Florida or something. Either way, I'm joined by our one of our favorite staffers, John Lindemann. John Lindemann is also known as Silks.
Hey, Birch. It's great to be here.
Yeah, welcome.
Douche here.
So, Lindemann, how long have you been on the staff with Planet GameCube?
Well, I've been on staff since
I think this run has been since, I think, around 2003.
Well, it's that's absolutely great. How many E3s have you been to?
That's absolutely great.
I think
shut
I've been
the hell
to four
up,
now. I've been to 99, I think 2001, and then 2005 and 2006. So cool here.
Really?
Yep.
Well, that's three more than me. I remember it was my first E3, and I had just met all you guys, and all of you guys had had dinner. And already, and I was dying of hunger, but the only one who hadn't eaten was you. And mm-hmm. since no one else wanted to go out to dinner, we went out to Denny's. And,
oh,
and that
like
was
Denny's.
My first moment with any, you were actually the first real staffer I got to know, was hanging out in Denny's, talking about video games. That's a moment. That was a real romantic, I mean, I shouldn't have said romantic just now. It was,
it's okay. It was kind of a Freudian slip.
Slip.
It's all right, yeah.
Yeah, whoops. It was.
I want to hold your hand. I didn't think it was appropriate that time. I just met you.
yeah. But so I guess since you've been to 43s, that means you've had four illicit encounters with Johnny, though, on record.
I've seen sides of Mr. Metz that nobody else would want to see. So.
Wow.
Yeah, the backside.
Hey, you went there. I didn't.
That entire episode is like all homoerotic humor through the entire episode.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I was surprised going back that it really foreshadowed the sort of pretty consistent tinge of homoeroticism that has continued to color your contributions to the present day.
The funniest thing, there are other things that Evan says in that podcast where he says – He talks about like Nintendo coming out with some new games. And he's like, yeah, I want to see what's in their sack. And then he's like, he clarifies it. He's like, sack of goodies.
Oh, that makes it even worse.
Lenny, do you remember the episode where you weren't on, but we had asked you to be on and you said you couldn't? So Evan and I did like a radio play and he played you.
Yeah, I remember this.
Oh, God.
I remember
that.
I remember that.
Yeah. Did you do an episode? Like, I remember you said about visiting him in Atlanta, but you ever do an episode together?
I did do an episode in Atlanta with Lindy. It was episode, I think, like 44, maybe? Episode 45?
Oh, that was... When he came to my house, it was classic because you came with your brother, right?
My brother and his girlfriend. And my brother was mostly there because I was like, yeah, I'm going to hang out with one of my friends on the side. He's like, how old is he? He's like, oh, he's like 33. And I was like, what the fuck?
No, seriously, the guy cased a joint like I was a child molester. No joke. And it didn't. And the funny thing was, it didn't even occur to me until afterwards. I'm like, oh my God, he thought I was going to like touch little Carl. Like, I was like, it hit me. I was like, oh my God, he thought I was like a creepy old guy. I'm like, that's not cool. It was never cool.
That is terrible.
Well, this segment has been a lot more disturbing than I anticipated.
I know, I anticipated that, actually.
All right, my brother and I, we drive across town. We find Lindy's house, which is like on the top of a hill.
Mm-hmm.
And we like knock at the door. It takes a while, and just there's, you know, there's Lindy. Might as well be holding like an axe.
Chris Hansen jumps out of the closet and says, what do you think you're doing here?
Exactly.
Do you know how old this boy is?
That's totally how it was, man.
Hey, I'll have you know, I was 18 at the time.
Yeah.
Oh, so their romance was legal.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So it's all good.
Hey, of course.
But not in Georgia.
I think we're going to have to draw a line under that. We're going to get on. So, yeah, that became the cast of a couple. Well, who we haven't looked back on yet is James.
Oh, good.
So, James, principally, what I always remember what he brought from the early episodes, and not to suggest that he doesn't still bring it now, is rage. And after a particularly egregious sort of situation where he was apparently forced to upload some pretty bad screenshots of Ubisoft games.
I was the only person on
games.
Staff during Ubi Days that was online.
Yeah,
yes.
And yeah, you pretty much acted like that was, you know, the worst thing that ever happened to anyone ever. and so that meant that Ubisoft was in for it on a very consistent basis from then on, as in this clip from the E3 preview show of last year.
I expect to see something cool from Capcom. Do I expect to see something cool from Ubisoft? Hell no.
No, they have made their bed completely out of shit.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly seems like...
Can we have the ding sound again?
It will have zzz at the end. Ubisoft will announce three games at Ubisoft. They will all have zzz in the title, and they will all be shovelware.
Well, I mean, it certainly seems that some...
Of course. The fact that... I remember, because it was like... I think it was about three minutes into that episode, and he got the first, like, anti-Ubisoft remark in. And so I said, we're going to need some sort of counter, like, you know, like the baseball when strikeouts, the K's. you know, or something like that. And, so, and they mentioned a sound effect, and then James went and put it in, which is brilliant. And it so worked, because it got ridiculous at times.
There's a part where it goes, ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. Oh, and it was worse than that. Like, there was the time when you had saw one screenshot of the Prince of Persia for DS, God. And it's like, it looks like an NES game. It's terrible.
It did look like an NES game.
But see, I feel like when I left, a little pocket of rage behind, and I feel like James picked that up perfectly.
The rage symbiote that latched onto James.
That's not even my angriest
carnage.
Moment on the show. I don't know what happened.
Oh god! Oh yeah. There's plenty. There really is. There's a good well of James' rage, and some of those were associated with his early review copies. First of all, there was Miami Nights. Who could forget that?
See, the rage wasn't really seething there. It was that the whole game just had this veneer of filth over it. That
no, it wasn't seething. That was more amused as well. You know, kind of playful. The hot tubs and all that stuff. But where it got seething was Pokemon Mystery Dungeon. Yeah. That's when it got out of hand. You know, and you actually were hosting an episode with no one to stop you. And
the best part
you went
of that
on
was,
and on about it.
It was a pure diatribe.
The best part was you all thought I was overreacting, and then you heard from Neil, and you're like, oh my god, it really is that bad.
But neither of those are my favourite of James's terrible review copies, if you can believe it. This is my favourite of James' terrible review copies.
Oh no, I know what this is.
I do too.
For today, actually, I got my next review game.
Oh, it's here it comes.
you want to not ruin the drama?
I'm building the drama. Dungeon. Work with me.
Okay. It is King of Clubs mini golf.
Yes.
One of my worst games of E3.
Yes, I did not know that when I picked it, but I knew it was bad because it's a PS2 port, and there's already a review out there. So I figured I could go ahead and just get a game that I could slam mercilessly. But I didn't realize at the time that it was published by Crave Entertainment, which is a bad sign. But it was developed by Oxygen Games. Which would be Greg.
Greg's
who?
Favorite studio.
Yes, yeah. Greg's old friends. I've played through about two sets of golf courses so far.
How are those motion controls, James?
They are the worst golf.
I mean, how the fuck do you screw up? Nintendo had a launch game with better motion controls than this.
Oh, dude, they're atrocious.
Just copy eSports.
So, I mean, it's almost 1-to-1.
If by 1-to-1 you mean it feels like you are being smacked by one golf club in your one head every time you swing it, then yes, it is 1-to-1. Yeah.
That sounds more like number 2 to me.
Yes.
Wow.
But
didn't take long for the doo-doo jokes to start on this episode.
But
yes,
but,
I
so,
agree.
So if you really want to see
more
some,
like King of Flubs.
If
right?
you really want to see some broken graphics though, if you hold the A button before you set your power, your character goes into this stutter motion. So you're emaciated Barack Obama with a DJ Jazzy Jeff haircut, wearing his members only jacket and his 3D goggles, like jerks around with the club as opposed to actually moving.
That's just your me, isn't it?
No. No. But the actual event that took place that caused my head to explode was the 7 times in a row DJ Jazzy Jeff announced, "I'm taking my balls and going home." Every time the ball went in the wrong direction, "I'm taking my balls and going home." I'm like,
what? Is Jazzy Jeff or Mr. T?
I swear, when I saw the 3D goggles.
Well, you see, Greg, America is a melting pot.
I like that you left out the part where I went crazy when I realized the game wasn't actually
saving. Oh, that's the thing. That's one of the longest clips. That's the longest clip we've had so far. It's a tiny slice of the animosity that he had to watch.
There's
this
so
game.
Many things wrong with that game.
I'm just climbing out of the
that
rage crater.
That one's worth going
right
back to listen to if you've never heard the original full-length clip.
Yeah, because I think it builds to a crescendo, and that Vesuvius erupts when I announced the game wasn't saving my progress.
Yes, that's right. It didn't even work, basically. Absolutely terrible. Well, we had games that we liked. We never had a Super Paper Mario that was like synonymous with the show. We had ones that we kept going. We had Geometry Wars Galaxies for a while. Then there was the whole Brawl period. Obviously, that was like all encompassing for the first so many months of the show that we did. And then there was Lords of Thunder, which, of course, you know, was a big slogan more than the game, to be honest. But what we liked better than games that we actually liked was making fun of games that were shit. So that began with the next clip, roll number 9.
Number 9? There's a Target Terror trailer, and I was told this had to be in the show, so let's, it does
have to be in the show. Yes. Let me tell you this right now. Having seen that trailer, I will tell everyone now, I am more than willing to surrender every civil liberty I have to be protected from that game. That is some sort of piece of work.
It's like, it looks like, it looks to me like Pit Fighter and Duck Hunter had some crazy, sickening offspring.
That's a good way to put it.
That is really, yeah, succinct and absolutely evocative. We pounded Target Terror pretty hard
for like a month and a half, and then none of us bit the bullet and bought it.
Oh god,
these clips are making me feel like we used to be funnier than we are now.
Oh, I mean, well, you don't know how much sifted through I had to do.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. These are the highlights.
You know what? We all need to procure a copy of Target Terror for an episode and just play it.
I agree. I think we should do a retroactive
Target
on Target Terror.
A Target Terror
maybe down the line.
We'll work on that. We'll,
I still haven't played it, and I kind of want to.
We'll get that
scheduled
so we all
kicks.
Played it, and then we can all talk about it.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the non-existent forum thread for that. Probably people just like laughing at us.
Where's the thread? I can't respond.
Well, of course, as much as we like making fun of Target Terror, that wasn't the main figure of fun. Or at least it wasn't anymore once you get to episode 99. This is how the European Wii Shop channel is trying to sell people on Chouiniki. Now, you'll have to forgive me because some of this just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So here goes. This isn't the entire thing, I cut it down a little bit, but the odd world portrayed in this shooter made it quite the conversation piece in its day.
Conversation piece!
players control either Ida 10 or Ben 10, celestial warriors out to bring an end to the tyrannical rule of Emperor Builder, who holds muscular prowess to be the supreme virtue of the universe. I mean, that doesn't even make sense. What the hell is that? Why is there English in something that's trying to get me to buy the game? But to finish off the spiel, it says, use your weapons to attack the Builder forces, or cut through them with a man's ultimate weapon, the Man Beam.
The best a man can get.
The Man Beam. Oh my god.
What is that? And that's all exclaimed, by the way.
Of course it was.
Convey the enthusiasm. So apparently it's not that bad of a game, this one.
Some of them branch out into other genres.
Yeah, there's a fighter.
The one that they did on Broken Pixels was like fighting game.
Yeah, it's a horrific fighting game too that I've played through less than legal methods, you might say. It was
Let's break the law.
Did you play it with the lights out?
No, I didn't, actually.
Maybe a candle
I
on your desk?
He played it in
a trench coat and a fedora.
It was nothing underneath.
It's just like...
I just wore that to work, thank you.
Oh, God.
Oh, it's priceless.
That's genius.
I mean, you gotta love it. You gotta love it when life just throws you these sorts of opportunities.
It was such a softball. It was just clack, right out of the park.
I would say throwing a bone, but that's probably a bad context to use that phrase.
Go for it, John. Go for it.
So,
that's the man's ultimate weapon.
Oh, God.
We had plenty of fun making fun out of games and all this. It wasn't all smooth sailing. James, John, and myself were passed over for a certain N64 episode.
Oh, no.
And, you know...
It wasn't like that.
Yes, it was. Oh, it was so like that. We handled it with grace and class. as yes, is evidenced in this particular clip from a few episodes, quite a few episodes later, but the resentment lingered.
Yo, why haven't we made any Johnny jokes?
Because we've had
stuff. Well, that's the thing. Oh, yeah, exactly. Okay. I mean, without Johnny here, we can actually talk about stuff. He doesn't dominate the conversation. There you go.
It's not just us going, well, you know, and then, well, what I think.
But look at me. I'm Johnny Mac.
There you go.
It still burns to hear that.
The bells return.
Yeah. I just love all impressions that are someone saying their own name. It's the Pokemon school.
I'm Johnny Metz. I'm Johnny Metz.
You know what's funny
what
is
that Johnny?
If you go back and there's the comment where I said, why haven't we made fun of Johnny yet? It's a reference to him coming back after 103 and having his 20 minutes of correction.
I am surprised that we haven't seen any 103.
Well, this is it. This is the moment we have to talk about, okay, you know, the pivotal 103, the fulcrum, the linchpin of the whole RFN sort of experience where everything changed forever. So
they would never
Johnny
be
was
the
at,
same.
So it was just about a year ago, and Johnny was at Bollaroo, and James was in charge of hosting in his absence in these days, and somehow, I don't know whether you'd like to explain yourself, James, but Stan and Carl were invited
on. So Carl
onto...
was scheduled to be on. That
no,
was
no,
the plan.
No, Stan was.
Stan was scheduled to be on, you're right. And then Stan came on and basically gave me some sob story about how Carl really wants to be on the show again,
yes,
and he misses it. And, like, it would make his day, and, like, his dog just died, and his...
I think it was a conspiracy.
And his family is all sick, and this is the only thing he has in life is this podcast, and he really wants to be... So I'm like, well... I'm editing. I can deal with the 5-person podcast.
Yep.
It's going to be hard on the system, but I can manage. It wasn't the system that was going to have the problem.
Yeah, so it wasn't long until it was clear what kind of a buzzsaw that James had walked into.
Uh-huh.
Roll number 12.
Do we have to?
Yes, we do.
Let me tell you something, just so we can put this issue to rest. If someone stood in front of me while I was playing Tiger Woods and actively peed on me, that would be a better experience than Super Swing Golf.
Oh, are you into water sports, Dan? Is that it?
It's just Super Swing Golf. Is that bad?
Okay. Golden Super Shower Golf is essentially what it should be called, then.
Anyway.
Super Golden Shower Golf. Glory hole golf.
Oh man.
Oh god.
I'm gonna do a little confession here. That only Carl knows.
I do so only know this.
The origin of Sweet Pete. I was making out with my girlfriend at the time.
She's like, pretend you're a pirate.
This urge overwhelmed me in the middle of the session, and I just went, yarr, I be Sweet Pete. And then I added in, for whatever reason, the gay pirate of the jungle.
That makes no sense.
Hello, Jonathan Metz.
Get Johnny on the phone right now. Get him down here.
I have a cell phone number. Should I give him a call?
Oh my!
And the sad thing was, I really was looking for Johnny's number in my cell phone. there is your
salute to Stan Ferguson. He is missed.
He's not dead.
Oh yeah.
And let me just say, if anyone's like, oh, that's funny, that was a funny thing that happened that one time in that episode, listen to that episode. That's the entire show.
It's the whole fucking show.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, that doesn't sound terribly shocking out of context relative to all the other clips that we've played, but you have to realize all these others were, like, you know, specially selected from those episodes, whereas this thing in 103, that there's like 2 hours of
yeah.
That is the whole episode. That is, like, all right, I have a lot of favorite episodes of RFN, and maybe we'll talk about this later, but that one is my most, I'm most proud of that episode.
Well, the commercials you guys did with Sweet Pea and Blue Balls were very fun.
For the, that was for the anniversary, for the 100th episode. Yeah.
Oh, that's
you,
right.
You guys should have gotten the outtakes on that on those commercials. They were really, really, really blue. Like we didn't use them because they were a little too shocking, I guess, for RFN. Like
too extreme.
Just like really just nasty shit that like we couldn't use because we knew Johnny would not be offended, but that like. It's RFN is like, all right, it's a kind of a wholesome show. Not wholesome, but like
I dropped guys, like four F-bombs today already. What are you talking about?
But no one's talking about like it, except for that one time when Johnny talked about kids giving other kids AIDS. It never got really too bad.
That's getting a little weird.
Whoa, what? I don't remember
that. MC Kids, Johnny?
Oh, MC Kids. Yeah. Okay.
So except for that one time, it never really got too crazy. Those commercials were too crazy, so we had to edit them down.
Oh, see, there was too crazy. Even from the people that gave you 103, yeah. They were too
and
crazy.
And I'm very happy that when people talk about their favorite episodes in the forums, 103 is frequently among them.
Well, you know, it's funny because we talk about 103 a lot, and I think people who didn't listen to the show back then are like, well, I'm going to go hear this episode, and they come back and they must think, oh my god, what happened?
Mm-hmm. It's funny, though, because I will say, I think 103 is the only episode that we ever actually got complaints about, like, legitimate.
Really?
Complaints.
What did you guys get complaints about?
No, people would say, like, you know, that was not the show that I listened to. That was awful.
Yeah.
You know,
well, like, there was very little actual video game content to it. It was just
there was very
little
content to it. It was, it was, like, these weird, like, slightly rose-colored jokes, then followed by just complete an hour and a half of bashing Johnny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, The reason that I did the corrections on the follow-up on 104 is that, you know, I was listening to this, like, you know, on the way home from Bonnaroo or whatever, and I couldn't believe how much you guys talked about me in my absence. I was like, this is unfair, because all this false shit.
I know, Carl's grasp of the facts is tight as ever.
Yeah.
To be fair, though, those were...
So
that's
why I came back. I was like, look, before we move on, I gotta set the record straight on some things.
You know, it's funny, because we had an email thread going between the three of us going, how is he gonna take this episode?
I know. I remember the quote I was bandying around at the time was from the Shawshank Redemption, in terms of how you would, you know, convey to Johnny what just happened, and it was that, you know, you'll feel like you've been fucked by a train.
No, hey, I don't mind the impersonations or the, you know, the cracks on me or whatever. It's that's, I laugh at that too, dude. That's funny. But no, what bothered me was like when you guys are like, Johnny's gotten like five free DSs from the side. I was like,
he wipes his backside with him. Use him as
you're just making
cakes.
Me sound like an asshole. It's
it
not
still
true.
Eats at him too. Listen to his voice. He hates it. It still bugs him.
I only say those things because I know Johnny has a good sense of humor about himself.
Apparently he didn't.
No, I do about those things.
Honest to God, though, like, there's no one who I respect more on the side than Jonathan Metz.
Well, thank you. And also, let me just say that the corrections, I'm not sure if it got across, but they were meant to be funny.
I know. It was a bit of a return to episode 5, I think. To be honest.
Oh, wow. Oh, ouch. Okay. No, I didn't mean them to be... I didn't mean them to be super serious.
Yeah, I didn't take them seriously. But like,
exactly.
We did.
I'm usually a lot crazier than this.
Yeah, I wouldn't have made
like
fun of...
Like that one time when I talked about Godzilla. And,
yeah. I wouldn't have made fun of anyone who I didn't think, like, didn't have, like, a good sense of humor about themselves. Like, even TYP... got the joke about Save It for the Show.
Well, you know, I actually went back and read the thread, the talkback thread for this, and TYP has a post in there, ouch, even I got hit in this one or something like that.
Yeah, he didn't have that much to complain about compared to others. Now, this is how the episode very slowly ground to a halt. So we now rejoin the train wreck already in progress.
Actually trying to apply the brakes if I think this is where it is.
Okay.
So now we've officially hit every non-staff member, every staff member, and every person who's ever actually visited Nintendo World.
This has gone from me thinking this is going to be the worst editing week of your life to the best, because you just have to flush the whole thing down the top of my head.
I'm not sure if I should try to cut a clean version of this and send that to Johnny before I post it, and then just post this.
How long is this clean?
You could never clean this up.
He's going to notice something's up when it's 15 minutes long. most of that is an unusual amount of Jason Ricci in the new blood.
I can't even do that. I only have like 20 seconds of
the entire album. I'll help you out. Somebody, I'll buy it on iTunes. Do something.
Save our show.
Dude,
tonight on Nintendo.
Thank you for helping me.
On Radio Free Nintendo, we'll be listening to nothing but Jason.
I'm just gonna have to send a little sad
email. You thought there was someone, there wasn't anybody left to offend. You were wrong.
Jason Ricci, the new blood. Check.
So
that episode wraps it up.
This has been episode one. We've been wrapping it up for like the last 20 minutes. This is episode 103 of Nintendo Godfrey Wang Report.com.
The real 103.
One day.
Episode 103 in the can.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
All right, there it is.
Can I just say, Greg, probably a good thing you didn't include that one remark I might have made, I may or may not have made, about a forum member who may or may not have resembled Evan.
It's not really, you know, by my discretion. It's just obviously I couldn't fit all the offensive things in this spectrum to be here for quite a while.
We did play a whole episode.
Wow. So, how many clips do you have left here?
Three.
We're pretty much done with the clips, nearly, so, right. You know, it all ends with 103. That is the end of history, pretty much, so...
Well, no, there's some left, right?
We've got some clips from the past year, some of my favourite bits from the past year's worth of shows, and we've talked about some of them, but we'll go around quick via some favourites. Johnny, favourite shows, most embarrassing shows, anything like that?
Oh, wow. Most embarrassing was the episode 5, which, I mean, you already played, and I was going to say my favourite moment was, like, that first episode that we all did together, and even though I don't... remember it very clearly, and I haven't gone back and listened to it. As awkward as it apparently was, something must have clicked. And what was great about it is, as I was saying before, like, you know, I really did not intend or did not expect for the group that Carl and I put together to become permanent. And yet, over the first 2 or 3 weeks that we did it, the chemistry developed really quickly, and it just felt like that was the way to go, you know?
Yeah,
and,
well, I mean, as I recall, like, when you start... Episode 84 is when you get the magic stuff, which obviously was featured heavily last year's birthday show.
I'm not embarrassed about that. I mean, you guys seem to think that I should be, but like...
But that was when the sort of the banter started to grow a bit.
Yeah.
And then the week after that, we had the Super Bowl show, and it sort of went again. And you know, I think we got, that was when we was really running from then on. That's some of my favorites.
What I was worried about for a time was that having the same group of people on every episode could get boring, because previous to that, one way that we had introduced a lot of variety to the show was to always rotate in different people every week. And so it was really different, and we had to take a very different approach to how we plan the show and how we did it on the air, and how we kind of tried to keep up this banter. And I'm just really proud of the fact that, in my opinion, that we've succeeded in keeping the show interesting from week to week, and we've built up a really solid, loyal listener base, and we get this great interaction through listener mail, which we're not going to get to today. Unfortunately, we're running pretty long here, but we'll catch up with that next time. And things like Retroactive, which I've, you know, that's something I'm really proud of that we introduced here in the past
really well.
6 months. Mm-hmm. And especially the Zelda 2, when I wasn't even here last week, and just listening to that, I thought, this is a great feature. Like, I'm so proud of this. I'm so happy with everybody's contributions to it, everybody's commitment to it, all of us buying and playing the games every single time, all the people in the forums giving these great comments and really being involved with it and being excited about it and voting in the polls and, like, being really... clearly, like, very, very invested in it, and like really caring about what game gets selected and what gets said about it. So, I guess I'm being a little sappy now.
Well,
we've had
some of my favorite recent episodes have been ones that features them, like the Eternal Darkness one where Carl came on with us.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
That was a good fun show.
All the editing stuff there was just so great.
I think it's a lot of my favorite memories are tinged with best and worsts, actually. Like, first of all, you've got the Ocarina episode, which it was really fun to record, and I was pleased with how it turned out, and we got great feedback. In between, John's audio went missing.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody missed me.
I had to reconstruct the panic at first of, like, we did, you know, I planned that episode, we recorded it, it went well, and it's fucked. You know, that was the initial thought. And then the funny thing about that is that
people love the music so much that you edited in there, but, like,
it was
the main reason you put
originally.
The music in there was because of the problems with John's audio.
You would have transitions that were just too hard
because you couldn't
have the natural segues that went with it. So that was the solution, and you know it worked pretty well.
I have to say that I was pretty impressed with that. I was out that episode, wasn't I?
Yeah, you could because it was Evan and then the three of us.
I was traveling, is what it was. Yeah, and I remember I was impressed that you just. Music in for John, because every time John had fucked up the show for me before when I was editing, it's like, oh, episode's done. Made the week off.
You know, on the same vein, I think the recent Super Metroid episode we did was really great, and I think all four of us were here for that. And
yeah.
I mean that's a game that I think is pretty dear to all four of us, and I thought we really did it justice. And I mean, I like these forays into Retronauts territory that we take sometimes, because it gives us a chance to stretch out and all talk about the same game and really get in depth and get on
and like
some
you said,
interesting.
You got to do something different, you know, with the same cast every so often, you know, to make it a bit of a different dynamic and stuff. And so that was a lot of fun to do. And of course, with the retroactives, we kind of. You know, don't necessarily go all the way down that road, but we do go quite a bit the way down it, you know, fairly regularly now, so I think that's really good.
And you know, I mean, I ran into Jeremy Parrish at E3 again this year, and I primarily wanted to introduce him to TYP because I want him to check out Radio Trivia. But, you know, I mentioned to him the Super Metroid thing, and I said, look, I mean, you know, in so many words, I basically said, I think this is as good as anything you've done, and I want you to listen to it.
Oh, snap,
gauntlet's
been thrown down.
No, I didn't phrase it like that. But I said, look, this is the kind of thing, you know, I said, look, it's similar to the kind of things that you guys do. And, you know, I think we did a really great job with it. And I hope you'll check it out because I think you'll appreciate it. And I mean, I think it's that caliber that, you know, that is an episode that I would recommend to someone who I really look up to and admire.
So it wouldn't be 103, huh?
No. You wouldn't want to get those
we
mixed
do something.
Up, would you?
We've created something that's the same quality. I strongly advise this to 103 to see us at our best.
Slash worst.
One of my other best and worst was the episode that we recorded with Bonnie.
Because nobody heard it.
It was a good episode. We recorded it. It
was
really
a fantastic episode. John and I didn't act like sophomore bastards the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
had opportunities
impressive.
Too. I mean,
because what
I could have taken it into the toilet easily.
Well, the listeners may—I don't know whether the listeners remember—the what we recorded was a feature segment. On basically was like sexuality in games, wasn't it? You know, and sort of portrayal of you know, relationships and sex in games. And so we had this discussion about it that went pretty well, as you say, didn't descend into silliness.
Well, a little bit, but not too much.
And we lost it because Molly's audio was cut in half.
I do really want to get Bonnie back on the show sometime. She was great, and I just feel terrible that we couldn't.
That could have been one of the best episodes.
Speaking of her, actually, one of her articles has been published in a college textbook that I think that was on Planet GameCube.
Yeah, because they wrote us permission, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah,
there you go.
That was very,
very,
very really cool.
Gifted writer.
Best writer I've ever had on the site, unfortunately.
James, you want to chip in with any non-103?
And weirdly, they all kind of come at the same time. So 107 is myself, Greg, and John responding to E3. So this was going on while they were doing the roundtables. Well, the field team was doing roundtables, and it was supposed to be like 20 minutes, but instead it came out to being like 2 hours, and basically we just. Assailed the entire E3 field team for most of it.
I think I was probably
jealousy.
It's not mostly me. Yeah, we were real jealous of it not being at that show, Johnny.
All right, what else was there?
And then 115, which...
The 115 is the one that where we didn't have any show. Johnny talks about Caligula.
Yeah.
I mean, it's it is a bizarre show. The thing I love, I've got to say this.
That is crazy.
One of the things that I absolutely love about Johnny, one of my very favorite things, is just how damn candid he is. Like, if it just enters his head that, you know, Julie Andrews or Helen Mirren was totally doable back in the day, he'll tell you,
yep.
You know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Dude, what do you mean back in the day?
Oh, lovely.
But, you know, maybe it's just my British perspective that makes that seem so novel, but, you know, I just love
but,
that.
But we actually then start talking about Choaniki's in that episode.
Choaniki's in there big time, man.
And then my third one is 118, which...
The Let's Tap episode.
Where John decides he's just going to sing the Let's Tap song.
That's great.
I can keep going.
It was after the full media summit, so, you know, it was loads of news.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny, because in that one it was the, they announced...
What?
That, and it's funny, because Let's Tap still pays dividends, because in an email thread...
It's coming out this week.
Yes, it is.
By the way,
and it's not coming with the box, which is what the email thread was about, the tap box.
Yeah.
I basically rewrote the song in an email, and no one said anything, because at this point, nobody reads my emails anymore.
Yeah. So, John, you want to chip in?
Yeah, the couple I have, I mean, of course, my debut with Evan, and the funny thing I have written down with that is that, I mean, aside from all the homoerotic jokes, Evan, he makes fun of me. I refer to the Super NES as the Super NES. And he just rips me a new one for that. I mean, he's just like, I'm like, oh yeah, well, you know, I play that, you know, I just kind of casually offhand say, yeah, I play it on the Super NES. And he's like,
this from like the man that brought us Leipzig.
Exactly, that's the irony of it too. And the thing is, it's so funny because the entire podcast just screeches to a halt, and he's like, wait a minute, Super NES? And we go off on this tangent about how I'm saying it wrong. It was classic. Also, the fact, too, in that episode that Pale, remember, I put up a DS game of Pale's Choice because we were having a debate as to what the release date of the Wii was going to be, and he actually would have won a DS game, FYI, because he was right. He picked the release date right. The other thing about episode 82, which was the one where we have the current lineup for the first time.
Yeah.
The classic thing about that I remember was that I was snapping on Greg. I was making fun of Greg. I didn't know Greg from a hole in the ground. So I remember I was making fun of Greg because he was talking about Contra 4 or something like that. And I was making fun of him. And I was thinking, I remember saying something and I was like, I don't really know Greg. I probably shouldn't be so forward with him because he probably thinks I'm a total dick.
He was right!
And also, I think that is also the first time that I get snapped on for having late reviews. Because Johnny snaps on me for having late reviews as well.
Another recurring theme. Spiderwick.
Yep.
Age of Empires. Mm-hmm. You know, the list goes on and on.
Yep. Also, the funny thing as well, the one last funny thing there was that Johnny's, once again, Johnny claims that he's going to retire. And he says that he's going to be a PR rep only after I take over as reviews editor. Which was awesome because he was doing reviews as like, you know,
pretty much another year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, one of my favorite job memories is what happened with episode 135 is the one with the Stinger Odyssey, as I called it, at the end.
The Stinger Odyssey.
Yeah.
Which one was that?
It's the one with, like, The Last Ninja, Julie Andrews, Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, yeah.
And it just ends with, and that's The Last Ninja.
That was awesome.
That Stinger is well worth listening to again.
So I also liked James James with his Day of Crisis.
Oh yeah. No, we've got to play that again.
Yeah.
I need to make the case for this game. So
take it away.
If you all can bear with me.
I need to rescue that girl. Holy shit, what's that? It's a goddamn tornado!
The music makes it.
Alright, tornado. I'm not scared of you. Got my friend, my gun here. Fuck you up.
Well, well!
Yeah,
it's like the shaft.
Yeah,
no. Steel. Force of nature.
Wow.
I've got one bullet left. And it's got your name on it. Grenade.
Grenade.
That did the trick. Yeah. I'm the only force of nature here. And I gotta go save that girl. What was that? Bear! Bears. Out of bullets. Out of bullets. Out of bullets. Out of damn bullets.
Bear?
Mine. Shit! He blew up. He's a terrorist. That bear was a terrorist. He has the girl. He's a bearerist.
Bearerist.
Bearerist. Oh, how long is this shit?
It's so ridiculous.
James, were you narrating over the game's trailer? I'm confused as to...
No, I made all of that. Every last bit of it was me.
Wow. It's so authentic, though.
That caught me so off guard. It was so funny. I'm just like, because I honestly didn't think James did it, and he didn't tell anybody really about it. He just pulled it.
Well, you know, because we talked a bit about it, like, you know, we're doing all these import games. Your games hadn't come out in America, like, sort of people, the idea of people would talk about specific games, about why, you know, it would be nice if they came out. And so James said, oh, you know, I'll do something for that. I assumed it would just be like a little spiel. You know, sort of like the Boomblocks Bash Party box art rant or something. No. But instead, it was an radio play.
So the music actually was the last thing I added because I'm like, I need something here. And then I added the Shaft music and
no,
it got better.
Perfect. Put it over the top.
That's great.
See, this is why I edit the show, so James can do things like that.
Well, I actually had a plan for one for this episode, but didn't quite finish it in time, I'm afraid.
No, oh, well, I think that's going to do it. I don't think you could go anywhere from there.
We're going to end on disaster.
We don't have to. Well, what's 14?
14 is... Oh, God.
We have to play... No, just from that reaction, we have to go there.
All right, go on. This is the disastrous fallout of 103. Roll it.
Oh, God. We'll start with the Reese. Yeah! Yeah!
Kicking it old school.
Hello, hello, everybody. This is Jonathan Lindemann, and here we are at Nintendo World Report with NWR Chat.
NWR Chat? Oh, that's right!
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't normally keep track of this stuff, so. NWR Chat. How you like that? It's the podcast, people. It's the podcast.
Radio smooth, community. Baby.
Hey, come on. I'm not the normal host. I'm allowed a few slip-ups here and there. Let's see.
You make it sound like we don't allow the normal host a few slip-ups here and there.
Well, that's the thing. I'm used to Johnny Metz's typical perfection. He's a hard act to follow, but I'll see if I can completely... make a fool
Look,
out
we've
of
already had one episode
way.
Of the correction segment. Do we need another one?
This might be it. I think we're going to have it at the end of this one. All right, here with me, I have the one and only Greg Leahy.
Hello.
James Jones.
Hello.
And TYP. Michael Cole. Where you at?
Oh, yeah. That's the best start ever.
I'm never hosting again, ever.
Well, it's funny because basically Johnny was going to be out the week. He was only back for 1 week, 104. And basically he announced afterwards, and James isn't hosting. And it was really like, I was like really hurt. I'm like, I'm sorry. I didn't mean for it to be that bad. James isn't hosting. And then he turns it over to John, who doesn't even remember the name of the fucking podcast.
It's the podcast, baby.
Out here with NWR Chat. I was like, what?
NWR Chat.
So what the hell was that?
And I have 10 posted ever since.
Oh, God. That was awful. I just remember completely drawing a blank. I mean, I was just like...
Yeah, no, the senility gags were just too easy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean... The good thing was that TYP wasn't there, because it meant we had to re-record it, and that ended up as the stinger instead of the actual introduction to the
show.
Thank
God.
Oh.
There, you know, there a lot of the mistakes and the flubs and the silliness that happens is because, you know, we get nervous for various reasons. And I mean, at E3, and I might put him on the spot a little bit. I hope I don't embarrass him, but like Chuck, on day two of the E3 yes. podcast, just a couple weeks ago, I'm watching it. You know, we're sitting around this little table in my hotel room. Chuck is visibly shaking, you know, while he's waiting for his turn to speak. And I just tried to make him comfortable and, you know, just ease him into it. But like at the end of it, I was like, Chuck, man, you look pretty nervous. He's like, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just it's more difficult than it sounds sometimes to do the show, and especially your first time or your first time hosting, or you know, you get put in a weird situation, or you're talking trying to goad something out of Ty, you know, like yeah, it puts you on the spot, and there's nothing to back you up, you know, there's no set, there's no I mean, cadence doesn't work very well in a podcast format, so you kind of have to keep talking,
right.
And you end up saying stupid shit that you can't really take back. Somebody cut it out and put it at the end.
Well, the funniest thing though is what people don't realize is like when you hear the podcast, what you don't realize is actually hosting is more difficult than it sounds. And the thing is, Johnny does a really, really good job of it. And
like I said, thank you before that it was even a compliment. Thank you.
No, but the thing is, like when I was put in that role, it's completely different, because the thing is, when you're just sitting here and someone else is hosting, you can pretty much just sit back and just kind of chat. It's just like talking to a friend. But the thing is, when you're hosting, you have to think of, okay, where are we at in the timeline? Is this person going too long? What are we doing next? How am I going to set up this next segment? All this stuff is going on in the background. So to just be thrown into that, I was like, NWR chat. That's like the first thing that came out of my mouth.
I think the rest of the episode was actually really fun.
I still don't think I'm great at hosting, but I think, you know, I've improved over time, I hope.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. No, but actually, Lindy, I actually feel the opposite. I feel it's a lot easier to host than it is to be a regular panelist. Because, I mean, for me, I can talk for until the day's over. But to be able to have to, like, wait your turn, and, like when you have that spot, you have to say something good. That, to me, has a lot more pressure than hosting. Because, shit, when you're hosting, it's like, you've got show notes, you know what's going to happen. Like, basically, your job is to interrupt people and say, okay, now let's cut to commercial. Like, but to actually have to wait and to have to say something is a lot harder.
I think that's what Chuck was feeling, too, is like, you know, because we were kind of going around the table, and, like, as we got closer to his turn, he seemed kind of agitated, and, yeah, I can see that. It seems like there's a lot of pressure on you.
I'm telling you, though, you got to get Zach Miller on more of these shows, because Zach so Miller is a diamond in the rough, I'm telling you, in the forgotten lands of Alaska, because when Zach and I were doing GI Radio, like, those were some of the most fun podcasts, like, that I've ever done.
Take that, Stan.
Yeah. Well, what is it about me where, like, I only host shows with men who are, like, 10 years older than myself. Like, what is it about that? Like, I go for Stan and Zach, both many years my senior.
And me.
But, Greg, you know, I didn't get to do my favorite moments.
See, yeah, Carl's just kind of like the icing on the cake here, I feel like, you know, I mean...
Well, you know, he's a pivotal player as we went through the process.
I guess
yeah.
so.
And
yeah.
of course,
all of the three. Really, like all of the train going off the rails, shitstorm moments. Here's your maestro. But I guess my favorite moments would have to be as far as like you know, of course, episode 103 and episode 52 and episode 100. Those are all awesome. But like my favorite episodes were probably right before the Wii came out. It was Evan, Johnny, Chris Kohler, and Billy. That was a really, really good show. I really enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, that was good.
That, I remember listening to that, you know, I was in high school, and I had rigged my iPod so that it was going through my shirt, and it went behind my ear. I think I was in calculus or something, like, listening to that podcast.
Nice.
Which is probably why my grades were so great.
I remember that one, you know, because obviously it was a really, right leading up to it. Although
it was just a really fantastic show, really informative, really fun.
I'm glad you brought it up, Carl, because it gives me a chance to maybe exonerate myself a little bit with these guys, in that the reason that I brought those guys on for the N64 episode is not that I thought, I want to do an N64 episode. Who can I get who really knows what they're talking about? Not like these, not like these regular dudes. It's that because I had enjoyed doing that episode with them at the Wii launch, I really wanted to get Billy and Chris back on the air sometime.
Yeah.
And when we try to plan out guest appearances, there's always an issue of like, what are we going to talk about? You know, because they're not in the loop with one episode to the next,
yeah.
You know, like the regular crew. So it's like, anytime you bring in a guest, you really have to think like, how are we going to do this? What's the topic? You know, and so when we came up, you know, when I started thinking about, you know, well, maybe I can do an episode about N64, I thought, well, this might be a good time to bring back Chris and Billy because I know they can both talk about
yeah.
it. All.
And at the end of the day, like, the reason that the reason that I come back and do this show and the reason that I always want to do more shows with, you know, Mike Sklens or Stan or Evan or whatever is because, like, it's fun. Like, you're hanging out with your friends. And I think that's why you want to bring in Billy. That's why you want to bring in Chris. I mean, they're your friends. It's fun to do shows with them. Like, they're really, really great on the show.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like...
And I don't get to talk to those guys nearly as
exactly.
often as
well,
I do.
I think we should mention a really cool recent episode of the 10th anniversary show for the entire site, the 10th anniversary show, which is episode 136, where Billy came on. And this was probably my favourite story from this episode. It's a really great show. But James, roll 16, the last one.
Actually, a funny story, when you say you have Miyamoto's business card. So remember, so when I was there for that month, I went to Kyoto. I mean, you can see all this shit on, I think, in the logs of the website, but when I went to Kyoto, the only reason I went to Kyoto is because that's where NCL is, so I wanted to go to the building, and I had Miyamoto's business card on me, and so when I went and actually found NCL, I went to the security post because it's like a gated thing, and you know, they basically don't, you don't get in the building. It's
like the Pentagon. You're not taking a tour, you know?
Yeah. So like I walked up to the security post and there's two guys sitting in there and I'm just this, you know, crazy American guy. And like, I had Miyamoto's business card in my hand. I'm like, I just like pointed like Miyamoto. I'm like, I want to meet this guy. Like, I want to see this guy. And like, they both look at the business card and they just look at each other and start laughing. And I sat there for like 5 minutes, and then they called somebody, and this woman came out with like this like brochure for the GameCube, and like gave it to me and bowed and said thank you very much, and I said something I think it's on the site, but it was basically in really bad Japanese. Please take me to your GameCube or something like that. Like, I said something just horrible. Like, and I was just goofing around, having fun. Like, I didn't give a shit.
Yeah, no, Billy is awesome. Like, I remember he came on GI Radio a couple times, and like that dude needs to do podcasts all the time because he is always like just nonstop fun.
Yeah. Well, hopefully G4 is gonna do something.
Yeah.
I don't have any insider knowledge on that. I should call him and ask him because I'd love to get him on here to pimp it,
yeah,
and
exactly.
Maybe he'll invite me over.
he's an untapped well, though, of just great stories.
No, Billy is a really funny guy. He's got so many cool stories, and you know, he's my mentor. So I wouldn't be doing any of this if it weren't for Billy. All right, well, I guess that's gonna have to wrap up the show. It's going on pretty long here, and sorry we didn't get to your emails this time. I hope you won't be too upset by that. We'll catch up on them soon. And, of course, you can send any thoughts about this episode, any of the E3 games that we haven't talked about that you want us to catch up on or whatever. You can send those to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. No penis enlargement spam, please. And
we do accept Dicto Chat, though. FYI.
Yeah.
Yes, we did.
I want to thank Carl for being our guest star on this episode.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Want to thank Greg for pulling out all the great clips, and also James for playing them and setting up a crazy
DJ
rig.
DJ James!
what?
Exactly. He's my DJ hero, I'll put
nice.
It that way.
Wow. That is awful.
Oh, God.
And actually, I also want to thank John for his excellent work as director of the website.
Yay.
I don't think he gets enough credit. He has been, he's only been doing the job for a few months, and he's made some pretty awesome sweeping changes already. And I think based on what I read in some recent meeting logs that we've got some really, really cool stuff coming up soon.
Mm-hmm.
And John is really instrumental in that. So, thanks all around, you guys. You're all awesome. You're so awesome.
So there you go. There you go. We all sharing that together, guys. Thanks.
Let's go get wasted right now.
All
right,
people. We're going to close down this long episode. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support over the years and your continued patronage of this free podcast. So,
and patronizing.
We look forward to seeing you on into the fourth year of the show. So with that, I will say adieu.
See you at episode 200.
Episode 203.
Yes. Oh my god, yes.
Bye.
So long.
Welcome, everyone, to the 82nd episode of Radio Free Nintendo. This is what I'm calling the start of Season 2, because we have a brand new cast and a somewhat new format, and all the old people are gone except me. So now you just have to deal with me. And to my east, immediate east, well, as you guys are about the equally east, I guess, John Lindemann.
Hey.
Back from a very long absence from the show. And James Jones.
Hey.
And it's his first time on here, but he's done a few radio trivia podcast editions with TYP. So it's very nice to have you guys on here. And we also have returning for the fourth or fifth time, Greg Leahy from England.
Hello.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for being here. I don't know exactly what's going to happen with the lineup as we go forward, but hopefully we're going to try a few different people in here and see what works and see who the fans enjoy the most. So hopefully we'll hear from the fans after each episode with all their criticisms and praises.
Are they going to vote us off?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's going to be American Idol. We'll just sync it up with American Idol every week.
I think Johnny was really strong this week.
I came on.
Yeah, but
it
sounded like karaoke.
I came on here to bolster my self-esteem, not destroy it. Come on, guys.
So for anyone wondering whatever happened with Carl and Obi, they have had some trouble getting together to record their farewell episode / year in review episode, but they still want to do it. So I told them we're not waiting on them. We're going to go ahead and get started, and they can do it on the side. So whenever they do that and get it edited, they'll put it up, and we can all enjoy that and say goodbye to days gone past. But for now, it's 2008. We're going to start the show all afresh, and here we go. All right, new business.